Now a logo appears, a ring of stars around a snow-capped mountain. Paramount, a Gulf and Western company. Opening titles appear in white letters. Paramount Pictures presents Mario Puzo's The Godfather. Above the title, a drawing of a hand grasping the sticks of a marionette, its strings attached to the word father. From a black background emerges the resolute face and fox-like eyes of a balding, middle-aged man. We move back slowly. Dressed in a dark suit, the man has a trim black mustache and a prominent nose and ears.
I believe in America. America has made my fortune. And I raised my daughter in the American fashion. I gave her freedom, but I taught her never to dishonor her family. She found a boyfriend, not an Italian. She went to the movies with him. She stayed out late. I didn't protest. 2 months ago, he took her for a drive with another boyfriend. They made her drink whiskey. And then they tried to take advantage of her. She resisted. She kept her honor. So they beat her like an animal. When I went to the hospital, her nose was broken. Her jaw was shattered, held together by wire. She couldn't even weep because of the pain. But I wept. Why did I weep? She was the light of my life. Beautiful girl. Now she will never be beautiful again.
In the foreground, the blurry profile of a second man behind a desk. He gestures to someone off screen.
Sorry.
The father is given a jigger of whiskey. He swallows half, then looks up to the listening man behind the desk.
I went to the police like a good American. These two boys were brought to trial. The judge sentenced them to 3 years in prison and suspended the sentence. Suspended the sentence. They went free that very day. I stood in the courtroom like a fool. And those two bastards, they smiled at me. Then I said to my wife, for justice, we must go to Don Corleone.
Behind the desk, the older man shifts forward. We see his tuxedo-dressed shoulder.
Why didn't you go to the police? Why didn't you come to me first?
What do you want of me? Tell me anything, but do what I beg you to do.
What is that?
The father glances aside skittishly, places his whiskey on the red desk blotter, then walks into the foreground. From behind and in silhouette, he whispers in Don Corleone's ear. The older Don shifts back in his leather chair. He has graying slicked back hair, a faint mustache, and eyes hooded in shadow. Frowning, he flicks the side of his mouth softly, then shakes his head at the father.
That I cannot do.
I'll give you anything you ask.
The Don scratches a gray cat on his lap.
We've known each other many years, but this is the first time you ever came to me for counsel or for help. I can't remember the last time that you invited me to your house for a cup of coffee. Even though my wife is godmother to your only child. But let's be frank, you never wanted my friendship. You were afraid to be in my debt.
I didn't want to get into trouble.
I understand. You found paradise in America. You had a good trade, made a good living. Police protected you, and there were courts of law. You didn't need a friend like me.
He plays with the cat's paw.
But now you come to me and you say, Don Corleone, give me justice. You don't ask with respect. You don't offer friendship. You don't even think to call me godfather. Instead, you come into my house on the day my daughter's to be married, and you ask me to do murder for money.
I ask you for justice.
That is not justice. Your daughter is still alive.
Women must suffer, then. As she suffers. How much shall I pay you?
The Don gives a relaxed glance toward two other dark-suited men at his right. He puts down the cat and moves slowly to the wide Venetian blinds behind his desk. The waiting men shift their positions. One puts down his drink.
Buonasera. Buonasera. What have I ever done to make you treat me so disrespectfully? If you'd come to me in friendship, then the scum that ruined your daughter would be suffering this very day. And if by chance an honest man like yourself should make enemies, then he would become my enemies.
He points a finger at Bonacera.
And then they would fear you.
The smaller man licks his lips, trying to swallow.
Be my friend?
The Don shrugs coolly. Bonacera bows his head.
Godfather?
He brings Don Corleone's hand to his lips.
Good.
The Don puts an arm around him.
Someday, and that day may never come, I'll call upon you to do a service for me. But until that day, accept this justice as a gift on my daughter's wedding day.
Grazie, Godfather.
Later.
Don Corleone smooths down the top of his hair and turns to one of his advisors.
Give this to Clemenza. I want reliable people, people that aren't going to be carried away. I mean, we're not murderers, in spite of what this undertaker says.
He sniffs the red rose on his lapel. The scene changes to an outdoor courtyard decorated with small yellow lights. A crowd of hundreds cavorts on a vast lawn. Moments later, we see the pink and black-dressed wedding party posing in the sunshine. Don Corleone turns to the young man at his side, one of the two from his office.
Where's Michael?
Huh? Don't worry, it's early.
We're not taking the picture without Michael.
The photographer steps aside. The second advisor from the office approaches the young man.
What's the matter, son?
Who's it?
It's Michael.
Sonny, a handsome man with bushy brown hair and sideburns, shrugs and moves away. Now, Don Corleone greets his guests. In the crowd, the bosomy Mama Corleone dances in her pink gown. The pretty black-haired bride and her new husband playfully jostle a friend. The scene shifts to a street just outside the courtyard that's jammed with parked 1940s sedans. A slight man in a gray suit leaves his car and walks over to a parked vehicle. He takes a pad and pencil from his jacket and jots down a license plate number. Back at the reception, a squat, roundish man swings his partner. Mama Corleone joins a glum-faced man at dinner. Elsewhere, Don Corleone approaches a contingent of dark-suited men. He embraces a tan-faced man, then leads him inside. Now the roundish man dances with a white-haired man, one pair of hands locked, the other in the air. Then they switch. Grinning, the plump man tires out.
Hey, Paulie! Let me have some wine! Paulie! More wine!
A young man brings a pitcher.
Ah, you look terrific on the floor.
What, you a dance judge or something? How about you guys just do it? Well, take a walk around the neighborhood, do your job.
The thin, gawky Paulie disappears in the crowd. Nearby, Sonny pinches a bridesmaid's cheek, then approaches a neat black-haired woman.
Hey, Sonny, come on, do me a favor. Watch the kids. Don't let them run wild, all right?
Well, you watch yourself, all right?
Arms crossed, the pretty Sandra glares at Sonny as he leaves. Now on a portable dance floor, the tall, glum-faced man laughs. He dances with a little girl who stands on his feet. Don Corleone smiles at his wife as they dance before the bandstand. From a distance, Paulie watches the bride graciously tuck envelopes into a white lace pouch.
20, 30 grand. And small bills, cash. In that little silk purse.
Hold on, if this was somebody else's wedding. Sfortunato.
Hey, Paulie! I got two gabagool. Gabagool!
Ah, it's a stupid jerk.
Nearby, the photographer points his round silver flash at Barzini's table and shoots. The tan-faced Barzini stops in mid-smoke and makes a gesture. Instantly, two dark-suited men swarm over the photographer. They deliver a cartridge to Barzini, who peels out the film and crumples it into a ball. Nearby, the Don's other advisor kisses his wife.
Have to go back to work.
It's part of the wedding. No Sicilian can refuse any request on his daughter's wedding day.
The handsome, fair-haired Tom approaches the house. He passes a burly man deep in thought under a tree.
Don Corleone, I am honored and grateful that you have invited me to your home.
Now Sonny charges down the street of parked cars to the gray-suited man.
What did he? Get out of here. It's a private party. Go on.
He approaches a man inside a car.
Hey, it's my sister's wedding.
The man shows his ID. Sonny rears up and spits on it. He marches back with Paulie.
God damn FBI, don't respect nothing.
A photographer shoots a picture of two bodyguards.
Hey, come here, come here, come here, come here.
Sonny grabs his camera and hurls it on the ground. Scowling, Sonny digs into his pocket and tosses a few crumpled bills at the photographer's feet, then marches away. Now a mustached man at Don Corleone's desk. Behind him stands a young man in a brown suit.
But towards the end, he was paroled to help with the American war effort. So for the last 6 months, he's been working in my pastry shop.
Azari, my friend, what can I do for you?
Well, not that the war is over. This boy, Enzo, they want to repatriate him back to Italy. Godfather, I have a daughter. You see, she and Enzo.
You want Enzo to stay in this country and you want your daughter to be married?
He squeezes the Don's hands.
You understand everything.
Thank you.
Mr. Hagen. Thank you.
He shakes Tom's hand and moves to the door.
And wait till you see the beautiful wedding cake I made for your daughter. Oof, like this. The bride and the groom with the angel. Very nice.
The light-haired Tom Hagen opens a small leather notebook.
Who should I give this job to?
Not to our paisan. Give it to a Jew congressman in another district.
Outside, a man wearing an army uniform escorts his female guest into the courtyard. Don Corleone watches them through his Venetian blinds. The young man leads his date through the crowd. She wears a wide-collared orange dress with white polka dots. Blonde curls circle her neckline under a wide-brimmed sun hat. She dances with the man, who has black hair and a wide, handsome smile.
He's not on the list, but Luca Brasi wants to see you.
Don Corleone leisurely turns away from the window. Scratching his ear, he approaches Tom.
Is this necessary?
He didn't expect to be invited to the wedding, so he wanted to thank you.
The man under the tree.
Don Corleone, I am honored and grateful that you have invited me to your home on the wedding day of your daughter. And may that first child be a masculine child.
Michael?
The orange-dressed woman.
That man over there is talking to himself. See that scary guy over there?
He's a very scary guy.
Well, who is he? What's his name?
His name is Luca Brasi. He helps my father out sometimes.
Oh, Michael, wait a minute. He's coming over here.
Tom appears instead.
Hey! You look terrific!
My brother Tom Hagen is Kay Adams.
How do you do? Nice to meet you. Your father's been asking for you. Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Tom escorts Luca inside.
If he's your brother, why does he have a different name?
Oh, when my brother Sonny was a kid, he found Tom Hagen in the street, and he had no home. And so my father took him in. And he's been with us ever since. He's a good lawyer. Not a Sicilian, but I think he's going to be consigliere.
What's that?
That's, like a counselor, an advisor. Very important to the family. You like your lasagna?
Michael grins. Now, the massive Luca Brasi kisses Don Corleone's cheek.
Don Corleone, I am honored and grateful that you have invited me to your daughter's wedding. On the day of your daughter's wedding. And I hope that their first child be a masculine child. I pledge my ever-ending loyalty for your daughter's bridal purse.
Thank you, Luca. My most valued friend.
Don Corleone, I'm going to leave you now because I know you are busy.
Don Corleone nods and releases Luca's hand. Tom shows him the door. Outside, Connie, the bride, an ivory-skinned woman with coiffed black hair, dances a jazzy step with her stocky, brown-haired husband. At the head table, Sonny sidles over to a bosomy olive-skinned bridesmaid and whispers in her ear. Her eyes light up. At a table in front of them, his wife, Sandra, indicates the size of something to a few attentive women. She holds her hands 6 inches apart, then 8, then 12, then 16. She spins around to see Sonny and the bridesmaid leaving the table. Her smile goes sour. Out on the lively dance floor, two senior men take the microphone. The men urge a protesting but smiling Mama Corleone up to the microphone. Inside the house, Sonny climbs a staircase as the bridesmaid chats in the kitchen. A small, gray-haired man at the mic. He makes dramatic gestures with his hands, including some thrusts to his left and right. Now, the bridesmaid steals up the staircase, where Sonny waits. Outside, the soloist dances a jig. Back in the Don's office, Tom sorts through mail.
I sent it to call. He apologized for not coming personally, but said you'd understand. Also, some of the judges. They've all sent gifts.
Tom raises a glass.
What is that outside?
Outside, a tall, dark-haired man wearing a white tuxedo signs autographs amid a throng of teenage girls. Connie lifts her skirts and prances over. She jumps into his embrace. Arm in arm, the bride ushers Johnny through the crowd to the dance floor. Don Corleone moves away from his blinds.
He came all the way from California to come to the way. I told you he was going to come.
Been 2 years. He's probably in trouble again.
He's a good godson.
Johnny! Johnny! Canta la canzone! Sing a song!
Johnny waves his hands refusingly at Mama Corleone. Next to him, the bride holds out her arms pleadingly, then encourages the crowd to clap. Johnny acquiesces. Kay and Michael at their table.
Michael, you never told me you knew Johnny Fontaine.
Sure. You want to meet him?
Huh? Oh, well, sure.
My father helped him with his career.
For my country.
He did? How?
Let's listen to the song.
No, Michael. This heart
I bring. Tilting the mic stand, Johnny croons to the seated bride. The girls clap their hands to their faces excitedly. The bride sways along with the music.
You are the one dream I pray comes true.
Tell me.
Well, when Johnny was first starting out, he was signed to this personal service contract from the big band leader. And as his career got better and better, he wanted to get out of it. Now, Johnny is my father's godson. And my father went to see this band leader. And he offered him $10,000 to let Johnny go. But the band leader said no. So the next day, my father went to see him, only this time with Luca Brasi. And within an hour, he signed a release for a certified check of $1,000.
How'd he do that?
My father made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
What was that?
Luca Brasi held a gun to his head, and my father assured him that either his brains or his signature would be on the contract.
Kay stares at him.
That's a true story.
Johnny Fontaine fixes a dreamy gaze on Mama Corleone. Kay's eyes stay fixed on Michael.
That's my family, Kay. It's not me.
Michael takes a drink. Kay's face brightens a bit. On the dance floor, Johnny gives the bride a final hug. He gives Mama Corleone a kiss. Don Corleone steps up behind her, wraps the singer in a hearty embrace, then pats his cheek. A crowd lifts its glasses. Don Corleone sips wine with his wife, then puts his arm around Johnny and spiritedly ushers him away from the dance floor. Drink in hand, Johnny nods to a few admirers and backpatters. Once outside the crowd, he whispers in the Don's ear.
Don't take care of it. Tom. Find Santino. Tell him to come to the office.
Tom grimaces. Holding hands at the table, Michael and Kay look up as a skinny man kneels between them.
How are you, Fredo? Fredo? My brother Fredo, this is Kay Adams.
Fredo leers into her face.
Hi.
He gives her a sloppy kiss on the cheek.
This is my brother Mike.
Are you having a good time?
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, this is your friend, huh?
Johnny with the Don.
I don't know what to do. My voice is weak. It's weak. Anyway, if I had this part in the picture, you know, it puts me right back up on top again. But this man out there, he won't give it to me. The head of the studio.
What's his name?
Waltz. Waltz. He won't give it to me in there. He says there's no chance. No chance.
Tom, in the hallway at the foot of the staircase.
Sonny? Sonny?
Against a door, Sonny heaves into the bridesmaid.
Sonny? Sonny, you in there?
What?
The old man wants to see you.
There, 1 minute.
Tom grins before leaving the hall. Outside, a black-dressed singer with a crown of rhinestones. Tom slips into the Don's office.
A month ago, he bought the movie rights to this book, a bestseller. And the main character is a guy just like me. Why, you know, I wouldn't even have to act. Just be myself. Godfather, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
You can act like a man! What's the matter with you? Is this how you turned down a Hollywood Pinocchio that cries like a woman? What can I do? What can I do? What is that nonsense? Ridiculous.
Tom stifles a chuckle. Sonny slips through the office door.
You spend time with your family?
Sure I do.
Good. Because a man that doesn't spend time with his family can never be a real man.
Don Corleone shoots a look at Sonny, then brushes off Johnny's face.
You look terrible. I want you to eat. I want you to rest well, and a month from now, this Hollywood big shot's gonna give you what you want.
It's too late. They start shooting in a week.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
He steers Johnny to the door.
Now just go outside, enjoy yourself, and forget about all this stuff. Want you to leave all to me.
All right.
He and Johnny embrace. Yeah. The Don kisses his cheek, then closes the door. Outside, a four-tiered wedding cake, 6 feet tall, is carried into the animated crowd.
time does my daughter leave with the bridegroom?
Well, in a few minutes, right after they cut the cake. Now, your new son-in-law, we give him something important.
Never. Give him a living, but never discuss the family business with him. What else?
Virgil Salazzo called. Now, we're going to have to give him a day sometime next week.
We'll discuss him when you come back from California.
When am I going to California?
I want you to go tonight. I want you to talk to this movie, Big Shot, and settle his business for Johnny. Now, if there's nothing else, I'd like to go to my daughter's wedding.
He swigs some wine. On the lawn, the wedding party convenes.
Carlo, we're going to take the picture.
Wait a minute.
No, Mike, not me.
Michael drags Kay into the picture.
Okay, fine. Still the puzzle. Okay, that's it. Just like that now. Hold it.
Moments later, Don Corleone parts the crowd as he leads his daughter onto the cleared dance floor. He moves with slow, confident strides. With his free hand poised in the air, he nods once to the wedding guests. Placing his arm around his daughter's waist, he leads her into a waltz. Holding the folds of her lacy white gown, she sways her head from side to side, following her father's lead. After several slow rotations, she unlaces her fingers and embraces her father. Don Corleone keeps his free arm outstretched to the crowd and turns his daughter again. The scene fades to black. The scene changes to a four-propeller airplane touching down on a runway. Now a panorama of the small peaked Hollywood Hills, a conglomeration of villas and palm trees stacked beneath them. Our view glides down toward a palatial Spanish-style office building, then fades into an entrance gate that reads, Waltz International Pictures. From a distance, we see a man with a fedora and a briefcase exit a yellow sedan taxicab at the studio gate. Seconds later, he crosses an open dock with exposed girders and scaffolding. Now he moves down a narrow access street between two wide, windowless buildings. A few others pass him on foot. One man glides by on a bicycle. Halfway down the street, he turns right and disappears into a building that houses a giant movie set. Inside, a silver-haired man in a checked sports jacket kisses a blonde-haired actress as flashbulbs pop around him. He steps over to Tom, but signs papers instead of looking at him.
All right, start talking.
I was sent by a friend of Johnny Fontaine. His friend is my client. He would give his undying friendship to Mr. Waltz. If Mr. Waltz would grant us a small favor.
Waltz, give us a listen.
Give Johnny the part in that new war film you're starting next week.
Waltz smiles over his pipe at an assistant. He leads Tom aside.
And what favor would your friend grant, Mr. Waltz?
You're going to have some union problems. My client could make them disappear. Also, one of your top stars has just moved from marijuana to heroin.
Are you trying to muscle me?
Absolutely
now
not.
Now, listen to me, you smooth-talking son of a bitch. Let me lay it on the line for you and your boss, whoever he is. Johnny Fontaine will never get that movie. I don't care how many Dago, Guinea, Wop, Greaseball, Goombas come out of the woodwork.
I'm German-Irish.
Well, let me tell you something, my Kraut Mick friend. I'm going to make so much trouble for you, you won't know what to
do. Mr. Waltz, come a lawyer. I have not threatened.
I know almost every big lawyer in New York. Who the hell are you?
I have a special practice. I handle one client. Now, you have my number. I'll wait for your call. By the way, I admire your pictures very much.
Looking at him squarely, Tom shakes his hand and leaves. Waltz to his assistant.
Check him out.
The scene dissolves to a black sedan cruising into the manicured courtyard of a clay-tiled mansion. It stops in a circular pebble driveway. Later, Tom and Waltz stroll past a three-level fountain decorated with four spouting lions. Nearby, wading pools are surrounded by marble statues.
This is really beautiful.
Well, look at this. Used to decorate the palace of a king.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Why don't you say you work for Corleone, Tom? I thought you were just some cheap two-bit hustler Johnny was running in trying to bluff me.
I don't like to use his name unless it's really necessary.
How's your drink, Tom?
Fine.
Hey, come on over here with me. I want to show you something really beautiful. You do appreciate beauty, don't you?
In a stable, a lustrous brown horse wearing a red cape
They are $600,000 on four hooks. I'll bet Russian Tsars never paid that kind of dough for a single horse. Khartoum. Khartoum. I'm not going to race him, though. I'm going to put him out to stud. Thanks, Tony.
Welcome.
Come on. Let's get something to eat, huh?
Later, in a dining room.
Corleone, Johnny's godfather. To the Italian people, that's a very religious, sacred, close relationship.
I respect that.
Just tell him he should ask me anything else. But this is one favor I can't give him.
Well, he never asks a second favor when he's been refused the first. Understood?
You don't understand. Johnny Fontaine never gets that movie. That part is perfect for him. It'll make him a big star. I'm going to run him out of the business, and let me tell you why.
He stands and walks to Tom's end of the table.
Johnny Fontaine ruined one of Waltz International's most valuable proteges. For 5 years, we had him under training, singing lessons, acting lessons, dancing lessons. I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on her. I was going to make her a big star. And let me be even more frank. Just to show you that I'm not a hard-hearted man, that it's not all dollars and cents. She was beautiful. She was young. She was innocent. She was the greatest piece of ass I've ever had, and I've had them all over the world. And then Johnny Fontaine comes along with his olive oil voice and guinea charm. And she runs off. She threw it all away just to make me look ridiculous. And a man in my position can't afford to be made to look ridiculous. Now you get the hell out of here. And if that goombot tries any rough stuff, you tell him I ain't no band leader. Yeah, I heard that story.
Thank you for the dinner and a very pleasant evening.
Tom pushes out his chair.
Maybe your car could take me to the airport. Mr. Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
The frowning, slightly befuddled face of Jack Waltz fades to the outside of his villa at daybreak. Gas lamps and cherub statues cast reflections in a calm pool. Our view drifts closer to the mansion, passing the now quiet fountain, and comes to rest on a balconied window. Inside, we see a covered figure sleeping beneath a lavish brass headboard. Our view creeps slowly toward the bed. The indistinguishable figure is wrapped in lavender and peach-colored satin sheets. As we drift closer, our angle reveals the back of Jack Waltz's carefully coiffed silver hair. As he stirs, a fold of sheet drops off his shoulder. It is stained crimson. Blinking away sleep, Waltz pushes down the covers to find his left hand slicked with blood. Shocked, he sits up. His pajamas and bedsheet are thick and wet with gore. He yanks the sheet entirely off to reveal the severed head of his prize horse, bleeding and biting its own tongue at the foot of his bed. A view of the dawn-lit villa fades into the pensive, permanent frown of Don Corleone. With his head cocked to the right, he raises his brow in mild acknowledgement. Seated before him are Tom and Sonny.
You're not too tired, are you, Tom?
No, I slept on a plane. Huh? Yeah, there's lots of notes here. Now.
Views of a wide-nosed man with a white fedora.
Salazzo is known as a Turk. He's supposed to be very good with a knife.
But only in matters of business with some sort of reasonable complaint. His business is narcotics. He has fields in Turkey where they grow the poppy. In Sicily, he has the plants to process them into heroin. Now he needs cash, and he needs protection from the police, for which he gives a piece of the action. I couldn't find out how much. The Tattaglia family is behind him here in New York. Now they have to be in it for something.
How about his prison record?
2 terms, one in Italy, one here. He's known as a top narcotics man.
Santino, what do you think?
a lot of money in that white powder.
Huh?
Well, I say yes. There's more money potential in narcotics than anything else we're looking at. Now, if we don't get into it, somebody else will. Maybe one of the five families, maybe all of them. Now, with the money they earn, they can buy more police and political power. Then they come after us. Now we have the unions, we have the gambling, and they're the best things to have. But narcotics is a thing of the future. Now, if we don't get a piece of that action, we risk everything we have. I mean, not now, but 10 years from now.
So? What's your answer going to be, Pop?
The Don only tilts his head. Later, with the dark-skinned Salazzo.
There. Don Corleone. I need a man who has powerful friends. I need $1 million in cash. I need, Don Corleone, those politicians that you carry in your pocket, like so many nickels and dimes.
What is the interest for my family?
30%. In the first year, your end should be $3-4 million. And then it would go up.
Now, what is the interest for the Tattaglia family?
Salazzo nods at Tom.
My compliments. I'll take care of the Tattaglias. Out of my share.
So I receive 30% for finance, political influence, and legal protection. That's what you're telling me.
That's right.
Why do you come to me? Why do I deserve this generosity?
If you consider $1 million in cash, just finance. Salud, Don Corleone.
His face held in a sour grimace, Don Corleone stands up in his circle of advisors. He uncaps a bottle of whiskey for Salazzo.
I said that I would see you because I heard that you were a serious man to be treated with respect.
He dusts off Salazzo's armrest before sitting down.
But I must say no to you, and I'll give you my reasons. It's true, I have a lot of friends in politics. But they wouldn't be friendly very long if they knew my business was drugs instead of gambling, which they regard as a harmless vice. But drugs is a dirty business.
Well, Don Corleone.
It doesn't make any difference to me what a man does for a living, I understand. But your business is a little dangerous.
If you're worried about security for your million, the Tattaglias will guarantee it.
Oh, are you telling me that the Tattaglias guarantee our investment?
Don Corleone takes his time, giving Sonny a reproving stare. Tom and Clemenza shift their eyes to the floor.
I have a sentimental weakness for my children, and I spoil them, as you can see. They talk when they should listen. But anyway, Signor Salazzo, my no is final, and I wish to congratulate you on your new business. I know you do very well, and good luck to you, especially since your interests don't conflict with mine. Thank you.
Standing, Salazzo wipes his hand quickly on his jacket and shakes hands with the Don. He nods to the other men, the glum-faced Tessio, the rotund Clemenza, and the gangly Frito Corleone. They file out after Salazzo.
Santino, come in.
Sonny stays behind.
What's the matter with you? I think your brain is going soft from all that comedy you're playing with that young girl. Never tell anybody outside the family what you're thinking again. Go on.
A chastised Sonny exits. At the door, Tom with a flower arrangement.
Tom, what is this nonsense?
It's from Johnny, starring in that new film.
Take it away.
Take it over.
And tell Luca Brazzi to come in.
Now, with the brawny Luca.
I'm a little worried about this Salazzo fellow. I want you to find out what he's got under his fingernails, you know? Go to the Tattaglias and make them think that you're not too happy with our family. And find out what you can.
Luca nods his blockish head. The reposed figure of Don Corleone fades to black. Now a snowy city street.
A merry little Christmas.
Kay and Michael, laden with gifts, exit a department store. Kay wears a furry hat and coat. From now
on, I got something for your mother and for Sonny, and a tie for Freddie, and Tom Hagen got the Reynolds pin.
Now, what do you want for Christmas?
Just you. A merry little
Christmas. The scene changes to a dimly lit apartment. Through a bedroom doorway, we watch Luca Brasi take a bulletproof vest from a suitcase and drape it over his enormous torso. He steps out of view, then returns, walking toward us while buttoning a white shirt. He takes a small revolver from a dresser top and spins the bullet chamber. Now, back in the empty club room.
Andiamo, Fredo. Tell Paulie to get the car. We're going.
Okay, Pop. I'll have to get it myself, Pop. Paulie called in sick this morning.
Huh?
Paulie's a good kid. I don't mind getting a car.
A petite man helps Don Corleone with his coat. The scene changes to the dark figure of Luca Brasi walking down a sleek Art Deco lobby with pale pink walls and gleaming gold trim. He pauses near a giant round mirror to take off his black overcoat. With the coat draped over his arm, he rounds a corner, then pushes through two swinging doors that lead into a red wallpapered lounge. Through a window pane etched with oriental fish, we watch Luca approach an empty bar. A smiling man in a tuxedo waits behind the counter.
Luca. I'm Bruno Tartaglia.
I know.
Un bicchiere di scotch. Pre-war.
You know big.
Salazzo, wearing a heavy coat, appears next to Tartaglia.
You know who I am?
Subtitles. I know you. You've been talking to the Tartaglia family, right? I think you and I can do business. I need someone strong like you. I heard you are not happy with the Corleone family. Want to join me? What's in it for me? $50,000 to start with. Luca nods stiffly. Not bad. Agreed? Salazzo offers his hand, but instead of taking it, Luca slips a cigarette from its pack. Tartaglia smiles broadly, offering a lighter. Luca's heavy face leans forward as he brings the cigarette to the flame with his lips.
Right.
The smiling Tartaglia pats Luca's hand, then grips it as Salazzo plunges a knife into it. A third man strangles Luca with a garrote. A close view of Luca's stricken face, mouth open, eyes and tongue popping out. The third man grits his teeth as he forces Luca down. Luca gives one last violent flinch. Tartaglia watches with lips curled in a snarl. Luca's bloody hand is speared to the counter. Through the window pane, we watch Luca drop to his knees. The scene changes to Tom Hagen leaving a department store with a new sled. Salazzo bumps into him on the sidewalk.
Hello, Tom Hagen. Merry Christmas. Hey, I'm glad I run into you. I want to talk to you.
Well, I haven't got time.
Make time, consigliere. Get in the car.
Another man blocks his way.
What are you worried about? If I wanted to kill you, you'd be dead already. Get in.
Tom acquiesces. A display behind them features a rotating Santa and Mrs. Claus. Now, Don Corleone exits a back door into an alley. Fredo waits against a black sedan.
Aspetta, Fredo. I'm going to buy some fruit.
Okay, Pa.
Fredo climbs in while his father approaches a stand of open crates.
Merry Christmas. I want some fruit there.
He points to a basket of bright oranges. The merchant fills a paper bag. Don Corleone points to some green peppers, then to a loaded vegetable cart. Two men with heavy coats turn into the alley. The Don's eyes dart up under heavy lids. The men run forward, pulling guns from their pockets. He drops his bag and leaps toward the car.
Bruno!
They fire into his body, now lumped over the hood. Fredo leaps out of the car, but fumbles his revolver. The men get away. The haggard Don Corleone rolls on his back, hitting the wide bumper on the way to the ground. His body sways for a moment on all fours, then he collapses face up on the street. Fredo falls to the curb and rubs his own head with a frantically trembling hand. A few elderly ladies gather to steal a look. Fredo rocks back and forth over his father. From above, we see a smear of blood on Don Corleone's chin. Now, the blue and red neon marquee of Radio City Music Hall. Kay and Michael stroll on the sidewalk below.
Mike, would you like me better if I were a nun? Like in a story, you know?
No.
Well, then would you like me better if I were Ingrid Bergman?
Now, that's a thought.
Michael.
No, I would not like you better if you were Ingrid Bergman.
Michael.
What's the matter?
She leads him over to a newsstand. He reads the headline of the Daily Mirror. Vito Corleone feared murdered. Inside, a photo of his father with the headline, Assassins Gunned Down Underworld Chief.
They don't say if he's dead or alive.
He crumples the newspaper, scouring the story. Lowering the paper, Michael glances around desperately, then runs across the street with Kay in tow. He enters a wooden phone booth and shuts the door. A light turns on in the booth. Kay waits outside, watching him.
Sonny, Michael.
Michael, where you been?
Is he all right?
We don't know yet. There's all kinds of stories. He was hit bad, Mikey. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, where you been? I was worried.
Didn't Tom tell you I called?
No. Look, come home, kid. You should be with Mom. You hear?
All right.
Sonny hangs up at his house. Behind him, his wife turns away. Sonny cradles her head.
Sonny!
Sonny roots through the drawer of a sidebar. He palms a revolver and checks the bullets. Sandra follows him to the kitchen door, but Sonny waves her away.
There's more news about your old man. The word is out on the street he's already dead.
Sonny slams him against a wall.
Take it easy, take it easy. Where was Paulie?
Paulie was out sick. He'd been a little sick all winter.
How many times has he been sick?
Only maybe 3-4 times. I mean, I asked Freddie once me to get a different bodyguard. He said no.
Come on, bring your friend and pick him up right now. I don't care how sick he is. If he's breathing, I want you to bring him to my father's house now. You understand? Now.
Yeah, you want me sending people over here?
No, just you and him. Go ahead.
A swollen-eyed Sandra emerges, holding a baby.
Look, I'm gonna have a couple people come over to the house, a couple of people. Hello?
Santino Corleone.
Yeah?
We have Tom Hagen. About 3 hours, he'll be released with our proposition. Listen to everything he has to say before you do anything. What's done is done. And don't lose that famous temper of yours, huh, Sonny?
No, I'll wait.
Now, in a dark corridor-like cellar, Salazzo sips from a steaming mug. A despondent Tom sits nearby.
Your boss is dead. I know you're not in the muscle end of the family, Tom, so I don't want you to be scared. I want you to help the Corleones, and I want you to help me.
He gives Tom a small cup.
Yeah, we got him outside his office just about an hour after we picked you up.
Drink it.
Tom haltingly lifts the jigger to his lips and downs the contents.
So now it's up to you to make the peace between me and Sonny. Sonny was hot for my deal, wasn't he? And you knew it was the right thing to do.
Sonny will come after you with everything he's got.
That'll be his first reaction, sure. That's why you gotta talk some sense to him. The Tattaglia family is behind me with all their people. The other New York families will go along with anything that'll prevent a full-scale war. Let's face it, Tom, I'm all due respect. The Don, rest in peace, was slipping. 10 years ago, could I have gotten to him?
Eyes watering, Tom turns his face away.
Well, now he's dead. He's dead, Tom, and nothing can bring him back. So you gotta talk to Sonny. You gotta talk to the Cabo regimes, that Tessio, that fat Clemenza. It's good business, Tom.
I'll try. But even Sonny won't be able to call up Luca Brasi.
Sollozzo nods, turning away.
Yeah. Well, let me worry about Luca.
Biting his lip to restrain a smile, Sollozzo spins around and glares down at his captive.
You just talk to Sonny. And the other two kids.
Slowly, Tom nods his head.
I'll do my best.
Good. Now, you can go.
Sollozzo accompanies him down the underground passage.
I don't like violence, Tom. I'm a businessman. Blood is a big expense.
They walk out onto a wide open street strung with hanging light bulbs. A dim billboard glows in the distance. The wind whips up a wet snow. A car approaches. Sollozzo confers with the driver, then returns to Tom, gritting his teeth.
He's still alive. They hit him with 5 shots and he's still alive.
Well, it's bad luck for me. And bad luck for you if you don't make that deal.
The scene changes to Michael getting out of a car at the front of a driveway. The car passes through as guards raise a heavy chain behind it and block the front gate. Michael enters his family's house. A few magazine-reading bodyguards resume their positions in the foyer. The house is filled with downcast visitors. Michael drifts into the dim living room. Upon seeing him, the round-bodied Clemenza stands up and takes his hand.
Your mother's over in the hospital with your father. Looks like he's gonna pull through, thank God.
Later, in the Don's office.
It's a lot of bad blood.
What do you
blood.
Think?
Too much.
Huh? It's too far. I think it's too personal.
Bruno Cattaglia.
Don would consider this all.
Who would kill all those guys?
Hey, stay out of it. Make it do me a favor.
Sollozzo's the key. You get rid of him, everything falls into line. And what about Luca? Sollozzo didn't seem worried about Luca.
I know if Luca sold out with a lot of trouble, believe me.
A lot of trouble. Has anyone been able to get in touch with Luca?
I've been trying all night. He might be shacked up.
Hey, make it do me a favor. Never try sleeps over with the broad. He always goes home when he's through.
Right? Oh, okay. Well, Tom.
Your consigliere.
And what do we do if the old man dies? God forbid.
If we lose the old man, we lose our political contacts and half our strength. The other New York families might wind up supporting Sollozzo just to avoid a long, destructive war. This is almost 1946. Nobody wants bloodshed anymore. If your father dies, you make the deal, Sonny.
You know, that's easy for you to say. Tommy's not your father.
I was as much a son to him as you are Mike.
Sonny's pointed finger turns into a dismissive wave.
What is it?
Hey, Paulie, I thought I told you to stay put.
Well, the guy at the gates, they said they got a package.
Yeah? Oh, hey, Tess, you go see what it is.
Paulie coughs into a handkerchief.
You want me to hang around?
Yeah, hang around. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah? Some food in the icebox. You hungry or anything?
No, it's all right. Thanks.
How about a drink? Have a little brandy. That's good to sweat it out. Huh?
All right, sure.
Go ahead, baby.
That might be a good idea.
Yeah, right.
To Clemenza.
I want you to take care of that son of a bitch right away.
Paulie sold out the old man, that strunz.
I don't want to see him again. Make that first thing on your list, understand?
Understood.
Hey, Mickey, tomorrow, you get a couple of guys, you go over to Luca's apartment, hang around, wait for him to show up.
Maybe we shouldn't get Mike mixed up in this too directly.
Listen, hang around the house on the phone and be a big help, huh? Try Luke again. Go ahead.
Tessio enters and places an open brown package on Sonny's lap. Two dead fish wrapped in a bulletproof vest.
What the hell is this?
That's a Sicilian message. That means Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes.
Michael hangs up the phone. Now, the outside of a cozy suburban home, Clemenza strides toward a black sedan. His wife comes out on the doorstep.
I'm going now.
What time are you going to be home tonight?
I don't know, probably late.
Don't forget the cannoli.
Yeah.
He climbs in next to Polly.
Rocco, sit on the other side. You blocked the rearview mirror.
That Sonny's running wild. He's thinking of going to the mattresses already. We got to find a spot over on the west side. You try 309 West 43rd Street. You know any good spots on the west side?
Yeah, I think about it.
Well, think about it while you're driving, will you? I want to hit New York sometime this month. And watch out for the kids when you're backing out.
The heavy black sedan backs out of the narrow driveway that abuts the house. Later, under a railroad bridge.
Hey, Paulie, I want you to go down 39th Street, Carlos Santos. You pick up 18 mattresses for the guys to sleep on. You bring me the bill.
Uh-huh. Yeah, all right. I must move a little bit the bill.
No, make sure that they're clean because those guys are going to be stuck up in there for a long time, you know?
They're clean. They told me to exterminate them.
Exterminate? That's a bad word to use. Exterminate. Get this guy. See how we don't exterminate you.
He's funny or what?
Hey, Paulie. Let me get fat. Now beat it up.
Oh. Yeah, Rock. What would you do?
No, me. Nothing. It wasn't me.
It's got to be him.
Hey, pull over, will you? I got to take a leak.
Beyond the New York skyline, the car pulls over on a road flanked by tall stands of wheat. The corpulent Clemenza gets out of the car and walks to the edge of the field. Keeping his back to the car, he unzips his fly. From a distance, we see a hand in the back seat point a gun at Paulie's head. Paulie collapses on the wheel. Adjusting his pants, Clemenza slowly turns back to the car.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Rocco, a husky man wearing a black beret, takes a small box from the back seat. The two men leave Paulie slumped against the wheel, bleeding from the forehead. The scene changes to a worried Michael seated on a garden bench in the Corleone's yard.
Hey, Mike! Hey, Mikey!
Yeah?
You wanted on a telephone.
Inside, Clemenza returns to a stove. Behind him, a group of men eat at a table.
Who is it?
Some girl.
Clemenza empties cans of crushed tomatoes into a pot.
Hello, Kay.
How's your father?
He's good. He's gonna make it. Huh?
I love you. Michael?
Yeah, I know.
Tell me you love me.
Yeah, I can't talk.
Can't
you say it? Yeah, I'll see you tonight.
Hey, Mikey, why don't you tell that nice girl you love her? I love you with all of my heart. If I don't see you again soon, I'm gonna die. Come over here, kid. Learn something. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. Then you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, some tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
Why don't you cut the crap? I got more important things for you to do. How's Paulie?
Oh, Paulie won't see him no more.
Sonny nods.
Where you going? To the city.
Well, send some bodyguards with him, all right?
No, I'm just going to the hospital.
Never mind. Send somebody with him.
Oh, he'll be all right. Salozo knows he's a civilian.
Be careful, huh? Yes, sir.
Mike leaves. Sonny grabs a hunk of Italian bread.
Send somebody with him anyway.
Later, a grim Michael rides in the back seat of a sedan. Two tough-looking men occupy the front seat. The car, with its bright white wall tires, zips through a blinking traffic light. The scene changes to the concerned expression of Kay, dining in a hotel room. Her hair is set in curls. She wears an elegant maroon ruffled dress. Fingering a glass of wine, she stares at Michael, who looks down at his plate, then stands up.
I have to go. Can I go with you?
Okay, there's going to be detectives there, people from the press.
You're all right in the cab.
I don't want you to get involved.
He sits down in his overcoat.
When will I see you again?
Hunched slightly, Michael stares despondently at the space between her and the table.
Go back to New Hampshire, and I'll call you at your parents' house.
When will I see you again, Michael?
I don't know.
Crossing behind the stunned Kay, he runs his hand lightly over her shoulder, then bends to reach her lips. Alone at the white cloth table, Kay stares into space. Moments later, Michael leaves the carpeted lobby of the hotel. The scene changes to a dark street outside a hospital decorated with colored Christmas lights. A taxi pulls to the curb. Michael's shadowy figure emerges. He stops, looks around, then climbs the empty steps to the hospital entrance. Inside, Michael enters an empty, dimly lit corridor. In a bright adjacent room, a sink is filled with dirty dishes. A lamp shines on a typewriter that holds a page of paper. Michael turns away and walks faster down the dingy corridor, which is empty except for a visitor's bench and a gurney. He enters an empty lounge with a Christmas tree and a spinning phonograph. A partially eaten sandwich lies on a nearby desktop next to a cup of black coffee. Michael runs the entire length of the corridor. At the end of it, he climbs a flight of stairs to a short hallway of rooms. Upstairs, he spots two empty chairs in front of a closed door and stalks toward them. A closer view of Michael in front of the room. He glances up haltingly to check the nameplate. From behind him, we see the door open gradually to reveal a bed, the hanging IV tubes, and the figure of Don Corleone lying safely asleep. An unbelieving Michael tiptoes to his side.
What are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here now.
I'm Michael Corleone. This is my father. There's nobody here. What happened to the guards?
Your father just had too many visitors. They interfered with hospital service. The police made them leave about 10 minutes ago.
The nurse pointedly checks her watch. Michael grabs the phone.
Get me a Long Beach 45620, please. Nurse, wait a minute. Stay here. Sonny, Michael, I'm at the hospital. Listen, I got here late. There's nobody here. Nobody. No. Tessio's men, no detectives, nobody. Papa's all alone.
I won't panic.
I'm sorry, but you will have to leave.
Michael scans the walls.
You and I are going to move my father to another room. Now, can you disconnect those tubes so we can move the bed out?
That's out of the question.
You know my father. Men are coming here to kill him. You understand? Now help me, please.
A close view of his father, unconscious, a tube leading from his nose. Now from a stairwell, we see Michael and the nurse wheeling Don Corleone's bed carefully around a corner. The nurse pushes the jiggling IV pole as Michael, walking backwards, steers the bed down the hall. The nurse stops and glances fearfully over her shoulder. Michael opens a heavy door. The nurse quickly helps him navigate the bed through it and into a utility room. They pass out of view. Now a close view of the left half of Michael's face peeking through the door's window. alternating views of the vanishing stairway, the closed door of Don Corleone's room, and the heavy door where Michael hides at the end of the corridor. From behind, we see a dark figure emerge from the shadows of the stairway. The man, wearing a black suit and fedora, walks toward the heavy door while checking nameplates against a slip of paper. A frontal view reveals a slight man with a searching look carrying a small bouquet of flowers. Michael springs out of the doorway.
Who are you? I am Enzo, the baker. Do you remember me?
Enzo.
Yes, Enzo.
You better get out of here, Enzo. There's going to be trouble.
If there is trouble, I stay here to help you. For your father, for your father.
Listen, wait for me outside in front of the hospital, all right? I'll be out in a minute. Go ahead.
Okay.
Enzo retreats. Michael joins the nurse and stretcher in the back room. He leans over his resting father, just as Don Corleone's eyelids flicker.
Just lie here, Bob. I'll take care of you now. I'm with you now.
Michael gently strokes his graying hair. He squeezes his father's hand, resting his lips on it for a moment. When Michael lifts his head, his father is smiling. The corner of his baggy eye shows the glistening trail of a tear. Now, Michael strides confidently down the main hospital corridor. A close view of Enzo on the steps outside. His eyes shift in the shadows. He still holds the bouquet. Michael comes out and grabs the flowers.
Get rid of this. Come here. Put your hand in your pocket like you have a gun. You'll be all right.
Turning up Enzo's dark collar, Michael flips up his own, then quickly surveys the street.
You'll be okay.
A wide view of the hospital steps from the other side of the street. The still silhouettes of the two men barely stand out in the shadows under the arc of Christmas lights. At the side of the steps, a small pine tree blinks colorfully. A closer view of Michael as he touches Enzo's chest in warning. A long black sedan pauses at the curb. The half-lit faces of three men peer up at the hospital. Michael stares down at the car unflinchingly, then slowly unbuttons his overcoat. We see his hand crawl gradually inside the flap. Down in the car, the men jerk their heads at one another with a scowl. The car pulls away.
You did good.
He gives a partial smile, a close view of Enzo's hands fumbling to pull a cigarette from a pack. Shaking uncontrollably, he brings the cigarette to his mouth. Michael sees him scraping the flint of a lighter. Michael takes it from him and strikes up a flame. The cigarette trembles violently as Enzo lights it. Michael gives back the lighter and pats the baker on the back. Two police cars race up to the curb. Three officers shove Michael, grab him, and frisk him. Someone exits a third car. A bulldog-faced captain steps into the half-light.
I thought I got all you guinea hoods locked up. What the hell are you doing here?
What happened to the men who were guiding my father, Captain?
Why, you little punk. What the hell are you doing telling me my business? I pulled them guys off of here, eh? Now you get out of here and stay away from this hospital.
I'm not moving until you put some guides around my father's room.
Phil, take him in.
Kid's clean, Captain. He's a war hero. He's never been...
God damn it, I said take him in!
What's the Turk paying you to set up my father, Captain?
Take a hold of him. Stand him up. Stand him up straight.
The captain belts him in the face. The officers scramble to hold up the sagging Michael. The captain steps back with a satisfied chuckle. Michael's knees fold under him, his mouth hanging open. Another car arrives, emptying a crew of men in overcoats. Tom Hagen grabs Mike's arm.
Attorney for the Corleone family. These men are private detectives hired to protect Vito Corleone. They're licensed to carry firearms. If you interfere, you'll have to appear before a judge in the morning and show cause.
All right, let them go. Come on.
With a savagely mouthed curse, the captain waves his arm and the bodyguards rush toward the hospital. Daytime outside the Corleone gate. Two guards lower the chain. A black car unblocks the gate as another rolls into the courtyard. A disheveled Michael climbs out with Clemenza and others and notices two gunmen on a balcony. They lower their rifles and nod upon seeing him. Tessio approaches.
What's with all the new faces?
We don't need them now. After the hospital thing, Sonny got mad. We hit Bruno Tattaglia 4 o'clock this morning.
Jesus Christ.
Clemenza motions Michael toward the house. They pass a bodyguard in a leather bomber jacket.
Looks like a fortress around here.
Inside, Sonny grins.
Tamanuch! Hey, 100 button men on the street 24 hours a day. That Turk shows one hair on his ass, he's dead. Believe me.
He pats Tom's behind.
Hey, Michael, come here. Let me look at you.
Michael turns his head, showing a swollen left cheek and jaw.
You look beautiful. It's beautiful. You're gorgeous. Hey, listen to this. The Turk, he wants to talk. He got you. Imagine the nerve on his son of a bitch, eh? Craps out last night, he wants a meeting today.
What'd he say?
What did he say? But a beep, but a bap, but a boop, but a beep. He wants us to send Michael to hear the proposition. And the promise is that the deal is so good that we can't refuse, eh?
What about Bruno Tattaglia?
It's part of the deal. Bruno cancels out what they did to my father.
Sonny, we ought to hear what they had to say.
No. 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 No more. Not this time, Consigliere. No more meetings. No more discussions, no more Salazzo tricks. You give him one message, I want Salazzo. If not, it's all out war, we go to the
Some
match.
Of the other families won't sit still.
They hand me Salazzo.
Your father wouldn't want to hear this. This is business, not personal.
They shot my father, it's business.
Even the shooting of your father was business, not personal, Sonny.
Well, in business, we'll have to suffer, all right? Hey, listen, do me a favor, Tom. No more advice on how to patch things up. Just help me win, please, all right?
Tom nods absently at a spread of food. Sonny walks around him and sits behind the Don's desk.
I found out about this Captain McCluskey who broke Mike's jaw.
What about him?
Now, he's definitely on Salazzo's payroll and for big money. See? Now, McCluskey has agreed to be the Turk's bodyguard. What you have to understand, Sonny, is that while Salazzo is being guarded like this, he is invulnerable. Now, nobody has ever gunned down a New York police captain, never. It would be disastrous. All the five families would come after you, Sonny. The Corleone family would be outcast. Even the old man's political protection would run for cover. So do me a favor. Take this into consideration.
Tom sits back and loosens his tie.
All right, wait.
Tom walks aside wearily. Michael rubs his forehead.
You can't wait. You can't wait. I don't care what Salazzo says about a deal. He's going to kill Pop. That's it. That's the key for him. Gotta get Salazzo.
Mike is right. Well, let me ask you something, Professor. I mean, what about this McCluskey?
Huh?
What do we do with this copy?
Our view closes in on Michael, seated calmly in a leather chair.
They want to have a meeting with me, right? It will be me, McCluskey, and Salazzo. Let's set the meeting. Get our informers to find out where it's going to be held. Now, we insist it's a public place, a bar, a restaurant, some place where there's people so I feel safe. They're going to search me when I first meet them, right? So I can't have a weapon on me then. But if Clemenza can figure a way to have a weapon planted there for me,
he nods with unblinking eyes.
Then I'll kill them both.
Sonny stares at him. Clemenza and Tessio grin.
Hey, what are you going to do? Nice college boy, huh? Didn't want to get mixed up in the family business? Now you want to gun down a police captain? Why, because he slapped you in the face a little bit? Huh? What do you think, this is the army where you shoot him a mile away? You gotta get up close like this, and bada-bing, you blow their brains all over your nice Ivy League suit. Come here. Mwah! You're taking this very personal. Tom, this is business, and this man is taking it very, very personal.
Where does it say that you can't kill a cop?
Come on, Mikey.
Tom, wait a minute. I'm talking about a cop that's mixed up in drugs. I'm talking about a dishonest cop A crooked cop who got mixed up in the rackets and got what was coming to him. That's a terrific story. We have newspaper people on the payroll, don't we, Tom?
Tom nods.
They might like a story like that.
They might. They just might.
It's not personal, Sonny. It's strictly business.
Now, a close view of a revolver.
It's as cold as they come. Impossible to trace, so you don't worry about prints, Mike. I put a special tape on the trigger and a butt. Here, try it.
Michael takes the small, snub-nosed .38 from Clemenza. We see only his hand as it works the taped grip of the gun. His finger starts to pull the trigger, then releases it.
What's the matter, the trigger too tight?
Not on my ears.
Yeah, I left it noisy. That way it scares any pain in the ass innocent bystanders away. All right, you shot them both. Now what do you do?
Sit down, finish my dinner.
Come on, kid, don't fool around. Just let your hand drop to your side and let the gun slip out. Everybody will still think you got it. They're going to be staring at your face, Mike. So walk out of the place real fast, but you don't run. Don't look nobody directly in the eye, but you don't look away either. Hey, they're going to be scared stiff of you, believe me. So don't worry about nothing. You know, you're going to turn out all right. You take a long vacation, nobody knows where, and we're going to catch the hell.
How bad do you think it's going to be?
Pretty goddamn bad. Probably all the other families will line up against us. But it's all right. This isn't going to happen every 5 years or so. 10 years. Helps to get rid of the bad blood. Been 10 years since the last one. You know, you got to stop them at the beginning. Like they should have stopped Hitler at Munich. They should never let him get away with that. They was just asking for big trouble. You know, Mike, we was all proud of you being a hero and all. Your father, too.
Looking him in the eye, he hands Michael the pistol. Pensively, Michael slides off a countertop in the basement workshop and aims at a target. Now a close view of Sonny shoveling Chinese food into his mouth. His broad shoulders ripple under his tank top undershirt and suspenders. At the table, Clemenza, chewing, glances at his watch. Tessio and a fifth man eat gloomily. Michael holds a cigarette between his pursed, pouting lips. Sonny swigs from a bottle while his blue-suited brother sits back and rubs his forehead. Tom enters.
Nothing. Not a hint. Absolutely nothing. Even Solotso's people don't know where the meeting's going to be held.
How much time do we have?
I'll pick you up in front of Jack Dempsey's joint in an hour and a half. Exactly an hour and a half.
We could put a tail on him. That turns out.
So lots of lose our ass going around the block.
What about the negotiator?
He's over at my place playing pinochle with a couple of my men. He's happy. They're letting him win.
It's too much of a risk for Mike. Maybe we ought to call it off, Sonny.
Negotiator keeps on playing cards until Mike comes back safe and sound.
So why doesn't he just blast who's ever in the goddamn car?
It's too dangerous. They'll be looking for that.
So lots of might not even be in the car, Sonny.
I get it.
Sonny stands and walks into the Don's office with its dark wood-paneled walls. From the table, the men watch him through several doorways. In the foreground, white Chinese food cartons litter the table. Sonny slams down the phone and walks quickly toward us. He glances at Tom, then touches Mike's shoulder.
Louis' restaurant in the Bronx.
Well, is it reliable?
That's my man in McCluskey's precinct. Police captain's got to be on call 24 hours a day. He signed out at that number between 8 and 10. Anybody know this joint?
Yeah, sure, I do.
Tessio nods.
It's perfect for us. A small family place, good food, everyone minds his business. It's perfect. Pete, they got an old-fashioned toilet. You know, the box and the chain thing. We might be able to tape the gun behind it. All right. Mike. You go to a restaurant, you eat, you talk for a while, you relax. You make them relax. Then you get up and you go take a leak. Or better still, you ask for permission to go. Then when you come back, you come out blasting. And don't take any chances. Two shots in the head apiece.
Now listen, I want somebody good, and I mean very good, to plant that gun. I don't want my brother coming out of that toilet with just his dick in his hands, all right?
The gun will be there.
All right, listen. You drive him and you pick him up after the job.
Come on, let's move.
Sonny catches up to Michael in the shadows just outside the room and puts an arm around him.
Did he tell you to drop the gun right away?
Yeah, a million times.
Clemenza stops with them in the foyer.
You don't forget. 2 shots apiece in the head as soon as you come out the door.
Clemenza leaves. Michael turns and raises his wide brown eyes to Sonny.
How long do you think it'll be before I can come back?
At least a year, Mike. Listen, I'll square with Mom. You know, you're not seeing her before you leave. And I'll get a message to that girlfriend when I think the time is right.
Michael embraces his much taller brother and kisses his neck.
Take care, huh?
He kisses Tom Hagen, then follows Tessio out. The scene dissolves to the red neon sign and facade of Jack Dempsey's restaurant. We move closer to Michael, waiting on the rain-slicked sidewalk. He wears a heavy brown overcoat and brown hat. Hands held behind his back, he shifts his feet nervously, facing the street. A black limousine with white wall tires pulls up, and Michael gets in. From the back seat, Salazzo puts a hand on his shoulder.
I'm glad you came, Mike. I hope we can straighten everything out. I mean, this is terrible. It's not the way I wanted things to go at all. It should have never happened.
I'm gonna straighten everything out tonight. I don't want my father bothered anymore.
He won't be, Mike. I swear on my children he won't be. But you gotta keep an open mind when we talk. I mean, I hope you're not a hothead like your brother, Sonny. You can't talk business with him. You do not worry, Janard.
He's a good kid.
McCluskey pats Michael's shoulders.
I'm sorry about the other night, Mike. I gotta frisk you, so turn around, huh? On your knees, facing me.
Michael turns completely around and kneels on the front seat.
I guess I'm getting too old for my job. Too grouchy. Stand the aggravation. You know how it is. He's clean.
A close view of Michael as he puts his hat back on slowly and adjusts the brim. The faintest hint of a smile crosses his lips. We see the car turn onto a ramp leading to a steel span bridge. It cruises over the treaded surface. On the right, a bridge sign dips into view. To New Jersey.
New Jersey?
Maybe.
Salazzo gives him a stone-cold look. The driver checks his rearview mirror. From outside, a head-on view of the car as it cuts left across the passing lane and skids into a 180-degree turn. The car climbs over the divider, pulls into the opposite lane, and cruises back toward the city. Michael looks into the back seat in disbelief. Salazzo leans forward to the driver.
Nice work, Lou.
Michael sinks a little lower in his seat and eases the hat off his forehead. Later, the car lurches down a dark, wide-open street. It stops outside a small restaurant with checkered trim and swinging doors. A red neon sign in each window reads, Louis Italian-American Restaurant. The three men get out. Now, inside the nearly empty dining room, Michael eyes Salazzo over a white linen tablecloth. McCluskey stuffs a napkin into his collar.
How's the Italian food in this restaurant?
Good. Try the veal. It's the best in the city.
I'll have it.
Salazzo glances up at the waiter.
Capito.
Biting the corner of his lip, Salazzo looks intently at Michael, who returns an unflinching stare, his lips slightly pursed. The waiter twists a corkscrew. Michael, with a tense, guarded look, watches the red wine being poured. The wide-nosed Salazzo places the first full glass in front of Michael's plate. Michael's cheek is still puffy.
I'm gonna speak Italian to Mike.
Go ahead.
Michael leans forward slowly on his forearms and clasps his hands. Salazzo waves at his mouth.
Mi dispiace.
Ci sei?
Salazzo nods once.
Tu, hai sapere che chi ti è successo tra me e tuo padre fu una cosa di business. E io hai un grosso rispetto per tuo padre, ma tuo padre pensa l'antica. E tu non lo può capire che io sono un uomo di onori.
Tu madre, sti così. Chi sai?
Lo sai.
The men relax a bit as a waiter arrives with a plate of food. When he's gone, Salazzo leans forward at the table.
E tu a sapere che ho aiutato la famiglia d'Italia.
A wide view of the small dining room. A manager crosses the mosaic-tiled floor. Two other tables are occupied.
Io voglio pace. E lasciamo perdere che tutti sti cazzati.
Ma voi gioca.
Che?
Come si dice?
Mike glances at McCluskey, who eats.
What I want. What's most important to me. He said I have a guarantee. No more attempts on my father's life.
What guarantees can I give you, Mike? I am the hunted one. I missed my chance. You think too much of me, kid. I'm not that clever. All I want is a truce.
Michael glances at a passing waiter, then turns back to him.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Salazzo glares at him.
Is that all right?
You gotta go.
Michael gets up. Salazzo puts up a hand to stop him. He runs it down Michael's jacket, then feels around his thighs.
I frisked him. He's clean.
Don't take too long. I frisked 1,000 young punks.
In the bathroom, Michael pushes through saloon-style doors to the inside of a stall. The toilet tank is mounted just above his head. He reaches up and runs his hand along the top right corner. Feeling nothing, he panics and tries the remaining sides. Out in the dining room, McCluskey, chewing, glances toward the bathroom. Now with two hands reaching behind the center of the tank, Michael carefully lowers something into the light. We see the small, tape-gripped pistol, which he cups gently in his hands. Outside, McCluskey glances up for a second time. Michael pauses just outside the stall. He rests his hands on his head, then smooths down his hair twice. He enters the dining room. The two men stop eating and stare at him. Michael returns a nonplussed look. They relax once again over their plates. Michael walks forward steadily and takes his seat. His unshaven face is drawn, his eyes wide. Michael nods.
Michelucci, tu mi capisci, no? Sei italiano come tuo padre?
We drift closer to Michael's dark, deliberating
tuo padre
face.
Sta male. Quando sta meglio, cerchiamo di fare un riunione e mettiamo tutto a posto.
His eyes move nervously, flitting from the tabletop to Salazzo's face and back again. His lower lip shudders as if to cry. He springs to his feet and aims, blowing a hole in Salazzo's forehead. He hits McCluskey in the throat, then again in the forehead. McCluskey clutches his collar, his head slams on the table. He upends the table on his way down. Two nearby diners stand up in shock, then rush away. On his way out, Michael lets the gun drop on the floor. From across the street, we see Michael hurry away from the restaurant. Inside, Salazzo's head arches backward over his chair. McCluskey lies in a heap, his bloody head tangled in the tablecloth. The scene dissolves to a spinning printing press. Now, a montage of fast-fading scenes. A bundle of newspapers with the headline, Police Hunt Cop Killer. Another headline, City Cracks Down, Pressure on Organized Crime. A glimpse of Tessio working on a crossword puzzle. A spinning newspaper, police captain linked with drug racket. In a dark, bare-walled bedroom, Clemenza lies down on a cot. In a warehouse-like prison room, a dozen men eat dinner at an oblong table. Nearby, an elderly man with thinning hair plays a piano. Another newspaper headline rolls up on screen. Mobster Barzini questioned in underworld feud. Under it, the tan-faced Don from the wedding reception. Images of men passing a salad bowl are superimposed by the newsprint words, mob killing. Various black and white photographs. A police official smiles next to a body lying in a pool of blood on the floor of a diner. A body slumped against a fence. Another corpse in blood-soaked clothes. A Corleone man takes a drag of his cigar and moves away from a steel-grated window. Leftover spaghetti is dumped into a trash can. The rotund, bare-bellied Clemenza snoozes on his bedding. Now an article in a newspaper reads, Syndicate big shot Vito Corleone returns home. Below it, a photo of the tuxedoed patriarch. The scene changes to a small parking lot behind a prison. Two uniformed guards carrying rifles divert reporters away from a parked ambulance. Clemenza and the other Corleone men pile into two sedans. A group of white-dressed paramedics moves away from the ambulance. Several reporters lag behind, jotting notes. With the two guards watching, the ambulance drives away, flashing its three red lights. It descends a steep ramp and turns onto a street, escorted by a police car and the two sedans. At the Corleone residence, a small crowd has gathered inside the cast iron gates. A wide view of the white stretch ambulance as it passes a car on a flat country road. In her driveway, Mama Corleone and the grandchildren move closer to the gate. Later, paramedics carry a stretcher inside the house. One white-suited ambulance worker helps a family man carry Don Corleone upstairs as Fredo, Clemenza, Tom, and others watch. The whole family climbs the stairs after the stretcher. The little boy in Sonny's arms punches Clemenza in the chest. Now a small black-haired girl at the Don's bedside.
I'm sorry, Pa, he doesn't know you yet.
All right. Sonny with his son.
Hey, big guy, give it to Grandpa.
I hope you get wed, Grandpa, and I wish I would see you soon. Love your grandson, Frank.
Sonny lowers him for a kiss.
Go ahead, go what you want. Go ahead, take him downstairs.
Don Corleone feebly blows a kiss as well-wishers file out of the room.
Go on, Carlo, you too. Go on.
Fredo, Sonny, Clemenza, Tessio, and Tom stay in the room. In the kitchen, Mama, Sandra, and Connie. Out by the gate, a guard throws a ball to some grandsons who play catch in the drive. In the dining room, Connie sees her husband sulking in a chair.
What's the matter with you, Carlo?
Shut up and sit at the table.
Upstairs, the Don's advisors stand around his bed. Holding his grandchildren's cards on his chest, Don Corleone opens his eyes and looks up at Tom. Tom adjusts his footing and leans a little closer.
Since McCluskey's killing, the police have been cracking down on most of our operations, and also the other families. There's been a lot of bad blood.
They hit us, so we hit them back.
Through our contacts in the newspapers, we've been able to put out a lot of material Klusky being linked with Salazzo and the drug rackets. You see, things are starting to loosen up.
Then I sent Alfredo to Las Vegas under the protection of Don Francesco Valet. I want him to rest.
I'm going to learn the casino business.
Yeah.
Staring at them, Don Corleone mouths words. Tom strains to hear. The Don swallows painfully. Tom and Sonny exchange glances. Tom leans over a little more and gazes steadily at the Don.
It was Michael who killed Salazzo. But he's safe. We're starting to work to bring him back now.
Wincing, Don Corleone closes his eyes and shakes his head slowly on the pillow. He lifts a hand and makes one weak, dismissive wave. Tom hesitates, then walks out of the room. One by one, the others follow. On the stairs, Sonny turns to Tom.
I want you to find out what a little pimp to tie his hide and on his ass now, right now.
Hey, Sonny. What? Things are starting to loosen up a little bit. If you go after the Kalia, all hell's gonna break loose. Let the smoke clear. Pop can negotiate.
No, Pop can't do nothing till he's better. I'm gonna decide what's gonna go.
All right, but your war's costing us a lot of money. Nothing's coming in. We can't do business.
Well, neither can they. Don't worry about it.
They don't have our overhead.
Don't worry about it.
We can't afford a stalemate.
Well, then there ain't no more stalemate. I'm gonna end it by killing that old bastard. I'm gonna.
Yeah, you're getting a great reputation. I hope you're enjoying it.
Well, you just do what I tell you to do. God damn it, if I had a wartime consigliere Sicilian, I wouldn't be in a shape.
Papa Jenko, look what I got.
I didn't mean that. Mom made a little dinner Sunday.
Told her.
You know, niggas are having a good time with our policy banks up there in Harlem, driving them new Cadillacs, paying 50% on a bet.
I knew that was going to happen since I started making big money.
Well, Papa never talked business at the table in front of the kids.
Hey, shut up, Carmen.
Hey, don't you ever tell her to shut up. You got that?
Don't interfere.
You know, Sonny, Tom, I'd like to talk to you maybe after dinner. I could be doing a lot more for the family.
We don't discuss business at the table.
Carlo stares at his plate. The scene shifts to Fredo, who slips into his father's room upstairs. He sits down sheepishly in a window seat next to a fruit basket. A close view of Don Corleone, staring aside mournfully, his grandchildren's cards still cradled to his chest. As he closes his eyes, the scene dissolves to a wide country pasture. A shepherd rounds up a herd of goats. Below a crest of high, rounded hills, we see three figures move across the horizon. Michael walks in the lead. He wears a tweed beret, button-down shirt, and vest. Behind him, two young bodyguards tote shotguns and wear ammunition belts. A dark green car pulls up. One rifleman opens the door for a portly man with kind eyes. I kiss your hand, Don Tomasino. The Don climbs out with difficulty as Michael approaches. Why are you so far from the house? You know I'm responsible to your father for your life. The bodyguards are here. It's still dangerous. We've heard from Santino in New York. Your enemies know you're here. Did Santino say when I can go back? Don Tomasino shakes his head gently. Not yet. It's out of the question. Where are you going now?
Corleone.
Take my car. Michael shakes his head. I want to walk.
Acura.
Now, shifting views of Michael and the bodyguards crossing the scrubby, parched yellow hillside, then climbing the terraced edges of a small mountain. At its top, a bodyguard points to another hill.
Michele, Corleone.
We see a cluster of whitewashed stucco houses nestled on the hilltop. Later, they stroll down a narrow, curved street, hemmed in by a high stone wall. Michael asks, where have all the men gone? They're all dead from vendettas. There are the names of the dead. The bodyguard points to a placard of names hanging next to a poster of a red communist flag with a yellow hammer and sickle. The men enter a deserted plaza bordered by a rundown church. Nearby, an older man works on the facade of a dilapidated storefront. Now, on the outskirts of town, a bodyguard waves to passing U.S. Army jeeps. Now, off a dirt path, the three men climb over a stone wall to admire an approaching group of young women and children. A curvaceous, brown-haired woman holding a basket and the hand of a child leads the group. One bodyguard looks toward heaven. Mamma mia, what a beauty. The young woman comes face to face with Michael, who stares into her eyes. She has a heart-shaped face and tanned olive skin. A bodyguard. I think you got hit by the thunderbolt. The woman narrows her eyes and spins back to the group. The guard nudges a dazed Michael. In Sicily, women are more dangerous than shotguns. The young woman keeps her eyes cautiously on Michael as the group walks away. Later, the men arrive at an outdoor cafe where a proprietor stands under the awning. The proprietor waves and approaches the men's table. Did you have a good hunt? A guard leans back in his chair. You know all the girls around here? We saw some real beauties. One of them struck our friend like a thunderbolt. The proprietor grins jovially. A bottle of wine arrives. She would tempt the devil himself. Goading them, the proprietor puts two fingers together side by side. A guard nods, really put together. The man nods, smiling, and with his hands traces the shape of an hourglass. The guard, such hair, such mouth. The girls around here are beautiful, but virtuous. This one had a purple dress and a purple ribbon in her hair. The smile passes from the proprietor's face. A type more Greek than Italian. Do you know her?
No.
He stands up, scowling. There's no girl like that in this town. The proprietor stomps inside. The guard, my God, I understand. Michael turns to the other guard. What's wrong? Let's go. The first guard sips his wine and says, it's his daughter. Michael points to the bar. Tell him to come here. Call him. Hesitating, the guard finally steps over to his chair, slings his shotgun over his shoulder, then disappears through a beaded curtain. The guard sitting next to Michael reaches for his gun. The proprietor appears in a huff, glaring down at Michael. Fabrizio, you translate. Legs crossed, Michael looks up at the owner.
I apologize if I offended you.
Ci dispiace se l'ho offeso.
I'm a stranger in this country.
Straniero in questo paese.
And I meant no disrespect to you or your daughter.
E non volevo mancare disrespetto né a lei né a vostra figlia.
E voi è chi? E chi parla di mia figlia?
I'm an American, hiding in Sicily.
Un americano che si è nascosto in Sicilia.
My name is Michael Corleone.
E si chiama Michele Corleone.
There are people who pay a lot of money for that information.
Ci sarebbe parecchia gente che pagherebbe parecchie picciole per informazioni così.
But then your daughter would lose a father.
Ma allora vostra figlia perderebbe un padre.
Instead of gaining a husband.
The guard gapes at Michael, who raises a finger subtly.
Invece di guadagnare uno sposo.
Ah, minchia, ma sei innamorato davvero?
I want to meet your daughter.
Vuole conoscere vostra figlia.
With your permission.
Con il suo permesso.
And under the supervision of your family.
E con il consenso di tutta la famiglia.
With all respect.
Con tutto il rispetto, naturalmente.
With a lighter expression, the man hitches up his suspenders, then looks at Michael.
Venite domenica.
Come to my house Sunday morning. My name is Vitelli.
Abito in campagna, vicino al fiume.
Michael stands and shakes his hand. What's her name?
Come si chiama vostra figlia?
Apollonia.
Bene.
Michael's wide-eyed, smiling face dissolves to a weedy dirt driveway seen through a rusted iron gate. The white-shirted figure of Don Tomasino stands at the corner of a house. He watches as Michael gets into a low-riding black sedan. The driver, holding a plate of food, gets in after him. The car passes through the gate. Now, Michael shakes hands with other men inside a small stonewall patio. He wears a dark suit and carries an armload of gifts. Plates of food crowd a lace-covered table. Vitelli introduces Michael to a plump, balding man. The solemn-faced Apollonia appears on a sunny second-floor landing. Wearing a plain beige dress, she descends a stairway. Michael looks up at her calmly, then returns to his introductions. Apollonia, her almond-shaped eyes wary and alert, enters the patio and sits down next to her mother. She and Michael exchange a shy handshake. Michael hands her a small wrapped gift. Taking it, she looks toward her mother for approval. The older woman nods, and Apollonia unties the white bow. Michael watches her lift the chain of a gold necklace. Without smiling, she mouths the word, grazia. A sheepish Michael replies, a prego. Another day, Michael's car pulls up to Vitelli's outdoor cafe. Now he sits outside across from Vitelli at a long table filled with wine and relatives. Michael converses with Vitelli, gesturing once toward the blackened bruise under his left eye. Michael makes eye contact with Apollonia at the far end of the table. Staring at him, she fingers the three gold strands of her new necklace. Michael grins earnestly, causing the first smile to break across her lips. She lowers her eyes. The elderly women next to her chuckle and pretend not to notice. The scene dissolves to another afternoon. From behind, we see Michael and Apollonia walking together on a country path. Her hair is styled into a bun and she wears a black dress. She nearly stumbles on a rock in the path, but Michael quickly takes her arm to steady her. At that moment, a group of six elderly chaperones emerge in the foreground, following them down the path from a distance of about 50 feet. Taking up the rear are Michael's two bodyguards. Back in New York, two sharply dressed Corleone men play quarters on a sidewalk. Our view glides up the dark stairwell of a nearby building where other bodyguards are positioned at intervals. One reads a magazine. At the very top of the stairs, Sonny backs out of a door, the bridesmaid from the wedding in his arms. Wearing only a slip, she tweaks in between the legs. Sonny taps her cheek, then descends the stairs.
Save it for the library.
Collar unbuttoned, Sonny approaches a guard in the lobby.
Come on, we gotta go pick up my sister. Let's go.
The line of fedora-topped men follows him cautiously into the glare of the sunny street. Later, Connie opens her apartment door, then cowers against the wall, away from Sonny. We see bruises around her eyes and mouth.
What's the matter?
He turns her around, then bites his knuckle.
It was my fault!
Where is he?
Sonny, please, it was my fault. Sonny, it was my fault. I hit him. I started a fight with him. Please, Sonny, I hit him. So he hit me.
I'm just going to give the doctor to come take a look at you.
Sonny, right? Please don't do anything. Please don't do it.
Okay. What's the matter with you? What am I going to do? I'm going to make that baby an orphan before he's born. All right?
You spec slump, still betting Yankees pretty heavy? Help the stuff taking action, right? You lost enough money last week, I believe.
Carlo sits on a stoop near a spouting fire hydrant. Sonny leaps out of his car with a baseball bat.
Come here.
He flings the bat, missing him, then catches Carlo in the street and throws him over a black iron fence. Pinning him against a brick wall, he belts him in the stomach and jaw. Sonny knees him viciously in the face. Carlo falls to his knees, where Sonny kicks his stomach repeatedly. Bodyguards keep the crowd at bay. Clutching a fistful of hair, Sonny punches his face. As Carlo grips the black railing, Sonny bites his fingers. But Carlo doesn't let go. Now frantic, Sonny tries to lift his leg, but ends up belting him with his own shoe instead. He lifts a garbage can and smashes him with it, then pounds Carlo's face with the garbage can lid. Carlo struggles onto the sidewalk, crawling into the fountain of water. With his black and white shoes, Sonny kicks Carlo all the way up to the open hydrant, where he rolls off the curb.
Touch my sister again, I'll kill you.
Gritting his teeth, Sonny turns back for one more kick to the head. Carlo's soaked orange-clad body rolls into the gutter beside the hydrant. Sonny and his men march away through the ring of bystanders. Now dressed as bride and groom, Apollonia and Michael make the sign of the cross. They rise from their knees on the steps of a church. A small band of sailors leads the wedding procession through the narrow dirt streets of Corleone. Handfuls of rice rain down over the newlyweds. The white uniformed band marches out of view. Behind them, Michael's shotgun-toting bodyguards squint into the sunshine. Next in line, the black-suited Michael escorts his new wife in a lacy white gown and short veil. They both wear constrained, humble expressions. Farther back in the procession, several dark-suited men push Don Tomasino in a wheelchair. Now an aerial view of Corleone, its weathered villas and tiled roofs blending in with the bristly yellow hillside. From a distance, we see the procession descending one of the steep roads that crisscross the hillside. Michael walks with Apollonia on his arm. He bends down to grin at a small flower girl, who bows her head with a bashful smile. The scene changes to an outdoor veranda, where the guests are seated in a circle of chairs. Apollonia carries a ribboned basket to each guest, spooning white candies into their hands. Under the veil, her hair is looped in two wide braids that brush the top of her shoulders. Behind her, we see Michael serving his own tray of candies. Grinning radiantly, Michael takes Apollonia's hand and leads her into a waltz. They dance alone in the wide circle of wedding guests. She wears a glowing, unfaltering smile as he spins her gracefully around and around. Nighttime. Michael, tie off, collar unbuttoned, walks out of the shadows and slowly crosses a bedroom floor. Apollonia stands by the bed, waiting, and wears only a white, lace-trimmed slip. Her long brown hair falls in waves on her chest. Michael stands before her, gazing. She blinks her eyes and steps closer. With his fingertips, Michael cradles the sides of her face and tilts it toward him. Gently, he kisses her forehead. His lips trail softly across her cheek to her mouth. She places her hands on his shoulders and leans into his kiss. Stepping back slowly, eyes not leaving Michael, she crosses her arms over her chest and pulls down the straps of her slip. The silky white material rolls off to her waist, uncovering her creamy brown skin and round, pink-tipped breasts. Still staring into her eyes, Michael drifts closer, hands poised in midair. He slides them around her sides and inches her close. They kiss deeply as she wraps her arms around him. We see the glint of a wedding ring on her hand. Back in New York, at the Corleone Gate, a woman in a bright red raincoat gets out of an orange and yellow taxi. A guard opens the gate. From behind, we see the woman enter and approach a few other guards. Tom Hagen strides down the wet walkway, wringing his hands.
Hey! Weren't expecting you, Kay. You should call.
Yes, well, I have. I mean, I've tried writing and calling. Now, I want to reach Michael.
Nobody knows where he is. We know that he's all right, but that's all.
A car with a blown-off door.
What was that?
Well, that's an accident, but nobody was hurt.
Tom? Will you give this letter to Michael, please? Please?
Well, if I accepted that, in a court of law, they could prove that I have knowledge of his whereabouts. Now, you just be patient, Kay. He'll get in touch with you, all right?
I let my cab go, so can I come in to call another one, please?
Come on, I'm sorry. Come on.
With a warming smile, Tom escorts Kay up the walk. Her blonde hair is topped by an orange rain bonnet. Fade to black. Now, a comfortable beige apartment with a marble fireplace. Connie, wearing a silk maternity robe, enters.
Hello? Hello?
Is Carlo there?
Who's this?
This is a friend of Carlo's. Would you tell him that I can't make it tonight until later?
The pregnant Connie takes a shaky breath and hangs up. She crosses the living room to the bedroom, where Carlo is putting on an orange striped shirt.
Dinner's on the table.
I'm not hungry yet.
Food, it's on the table. It's getting cold.
I'll eat out later.
You just told me to make you dinner.
Hey, bafangul, huh?
Oh, bafangul, you!
She disappears into another room. Carlo fixes his shiny metallic necktie. In the kitchen, Connie hurls dishes, eggs, and dry spaghetti to the floor.
That's it. Break it all, you spoiled guinea brat. Break it all!
In the dining room, she smashes and overturns plates of food.
Why don't you beat your heart off at dinner?
Get the After dumping a pitcher of wine, she topples vase after vase on a display cabinet.
Now clean it up!
Oh, my God!
Clean it up, you spoiled brat!
He whips her with his belt.
Clean it up, I said! Clean it up!
She runs under a drape, then into the living room, slamming the French doors. Carlo corners her. She throws a rack of poker chips as Carlo thrashes her. In the kitchen, she grabs a carving knife.
Come on now, kill me. Be a murderer like your father. Come on, all you Corleones are murderers anyway. Come on, you... Come on, kill me.
Carlo knocks away the knife.
Get out of here.
I hate you.
Now, go ahead. Now I'll kill you. You guinea brat, you. Get out of here.
He breaks open a bathroom door. We see it close behind him.
What's the matter? I can't hear you. What is it? Honey, talk louder. The baby's crying. Sanjeev, I can't understand. I don't understand.
Yeah, Connie.
Sonny holds a hand over his ear, straining to listen to the phone.
Listen, you wait there. No, no. You just wait there. Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch!
What's the matter?
Son of a
bitch! Sonny storms outside.
Open the goddamn gate. Get off your ass.
He climbs into the driver's seat of a car. Tom Hagen and another man hurry out of the house. Doing a three-point turn in the driveway, Sonny swings the car back toward the front gate in a cloud of dust.
Sonny!
Sonny, come on!
Get out of here!
The car rips out of the driveway as three hired men scramble into a second car. The scene changes to a wide, flat country road. We see Sonny's car round a bend to approach a three-station toll booth. He is second in line. The booth attendant takes Sonny's dollar. The car in front of him doesn't move.
Son of a bitch.
The attendant shuts his window and ducks. Sonny looks around. Men with Tommy guns rise up from the other booth and swarm out of the car in front. Sonny's windshield shatters. The booth windows crumble as Sonny takes bullets on both sides of his body. Spattered with blood, he struggles out of the passenger's side. When he gets to his feet, bullets riddle his body in a gruesome dance. Blood streams over his face and teeth. Writhing against the car, he falls on his back. One man sprays a last salvo of bullets into Sonny's body, then kicks his head. The gunmen hightail it away from the scene. Behind the running men, we see Sonny's black car at the toll booth window, pockmarked with bullet holes. The booth near the car is torn to shreds. One headlight is completely shot away. We see a wide view of Sonny's body, on its back, slumped across the lane divider. The riddled passenger door hangs open. A black car rounds the corner to the toll booth and stops 50 yards away. One of Tom's men jumps out, looks, then rushes back inside. The scene dissolves to Tom Hagen, alone in Don Corleone's office. He sits motionless in a leather chair, a drink held to his chest. We move closer to him. The room is furnished in dark wood and rich oriental rugs. A figure appears at the doorway. Don Corleone, wearing pajamas and a bathrobe, walks slowly into the room. He sits down in a chair next to Tom. A low polished table with a phone rests between them. Tom turns and looks him straight in the eye. Tom hands him his glass of whiskey. The Don takes a small sip. His hair long and ragged, a bandage around his neck.
My wife is crying upstairs. I hear cars coming to the house. A Sigliere of mine. I think you should tell your Don what everyone seems to know.
I didn't tell Mama anything. I was about to come up and wake you just now and tell you.
But you needed a drink first. Now you've had your drink.
Looking at him directly, Tom gives a slight nod.
They shot Sonny on the causeway. He's dead.
The Don's brow trembles. His face lowers into shadow as he bows his head. Chest heaving, he squeezes his eyes shut, draws his cheery eyes heavenward, then weakly holds up a finger to Tom.
I want all inquiries made.
His jaw buckles and shakes.
I want no acts of vengeance. I want you to arrange a meeting with the heads of the five families. This war stops now.
Don Corleone gets up heavily from his chair. He puts a hand on Tom's back as the young man sheepishly buries his forehead against his side. Don Corleone rubs Tom's back lightly, then walks past the phone.
Call Bronson. We need him now.
The Don walks slowly out of the room and into the foyer, leaving Tom behind with the phone.
This is Tom Hagen. I'm calling Vito Corleone at his request. Now, you owe your Don a service. He has no doubt that you will repay it. Now, he will be at your funeral parlor in 1 hour. Be there to greet him.
A view of the Petite Bonacera through the door of a descending elevator. Two men leave the elevator carrying a covered stretcher. Tom Hagen and the dark-eyed Don exit after them. Don Corleone takes off his hat as he tiredly approaches the waiting man. He looks down at him with a twisted frown.
Well, my friend, are you ready to do me the service?
Yes. What do you want me to do?
A haggard Don Corleone moves to the side of the covered stretcher and turns to look at Bonacera.
I want you to use all your powers and all his skills. I don't want his mother to see him this way.
He lifts the corner of the blanket. We see a partial view of Sonny, the blood caked on his face. The undertaker's eyes widen. Don Corleone, his face awash in shadows, gazes at the body of his son. His high forehead twists and wrinkles.
Look how they massacred my boy.
His eyebrows arch and tremble. His lips curl upward in a smile-like grimace of grief. Now, Apollonia in a driver's seat. She eagerly steers a car as Michael, sitting next to her, corrects the wheel. From overhead, we see the car cruising about Tomasino's circular dirt driveway. It comes to a stop near an island of grass, and Michael gets out. It's safer to teach you English. I know English.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Saturday.
A dark green car pulls into the driveway. Michael approaches it. Greetings, Don Tomasino. How are things in Palermo? The portly guardian labors out of the car and shakes his head. Apollonia dances up to him. Michael is teaching me to drive. Watch, I'll show you. How are things in Palermo? Young people don't respect anything anymore. Times are changing for the worse. This place has become too dangerous for you. I want you to move to a villa near Siracusa, right now. Michael puts a hand on his shoulder. What's wrong? Don Tomasino frowns. Bad news from America. Your brother Santino, they killed him. Michael, unmoving, lowers his eyes. Apollonia behind the wheel. Let's go, you promised. Looking back at his wife, Michael gradually turns back to Don Tomasino. He looks his guardian in the eye, then grimly turns away. The guardian sadly touches his shoulder. Later, Michael appears on a balcony, buttoning his cuff.
Fabrizio!
Yes, sir.
Prepara la macchina.
Get the car.
Are you driving yourself, boss?
Yes.
Is your wife coming with you?
No, I want you to take her to her father's house, so I know things are safe.
Okay, anything you say, boss.
Fabrizio strides away. Moments later, Michael visits a bunkhouse where the other bodyguard is eating a meal.
Callo,
where is Apollonia? She's going to surprise you. She wants to drive. She'll make a good American wife. Michael smiles and leaves. Wait, I'll get the baggage. Later, out by the car, Callo loads up the trunk with luggage. Michael sees Fabrizio slipping out a side gate.
Fabrizio.
Where are you going?
Dove vai?
Michele, aspettami lì che vengo.
Wait there, I'll drive to you. Michael looks at Fabrizio, who runs around a corner, then at the car.
No! No, I belong!
Michael is thrown backward as fire consumes the car. The roof is reduced to a black skeleton. Orange flames lick the smoke-filled sky. Fade to black. Now our view scans the facade of a giant tan brick building in New York City. Inside, dark-suited men sit at a large round table.
Don Bassini, I want to thank you for helping me organize this meeting here today. And also the other heads of the five families, New York, New Jersey. Carmine Cuneo from the Bronx and Brooklyn. Philip Italian from Staten Island. We have with us Victor Strachey and all the other associates who came as far as from California, Kansas City, and all the other territories of the country. Thank you.
Tom helps Don Corleone into his seat. He holds his hands wide as if to shrug.
How did things ever get so far? I don't know. It was so unfortunate, so unnecessary. Italia lost the son. I lost the son. We're quits. And if Italia agrees, then I'm willing to let things go on the way they were before.
Barzini.
We are all grateful to Don Corleone for calling this meeting. We all know him as a man of his word. A modest man. He'll always listen to reason.
Yes, Don Barzini. He's too modest. He had all the judges and politicians in his pocket. He refused to share them.
When did I ever refuse an accommodation? All of you know me here. When did I ever refuse? Except one time. And why? Because I believe this drug business is going to destroy us in the years to come. I mean, it's not like gambling or liquor, even women, which is something that most people want nowadays, and it's forbidden to them by the Pezzanavanti of the church. Even the police departments that have helped us in the past with gambling and other things are going to refuse to help us when it comes to narcotics. And I believed that then, and I believe that now.
Times have changed. It's not like the old days, where we can do anything we want. A refusal is not the act of a friend. If Don Corleone had all the judges and the politicians in New York, then he must share them, all it others use them. He must let us draw the water from the well. Certainly he can present a bill for such services. After all, we are not communists.
I also don't believe in drugs. For years, I paid my people extra so they wouldn't do that kind of business. Somebody comes to them and says, I have powders. If you put up $3,000-$4,000 investment, we can make $50,000 distributing. So they can't resist. I want to control it as a business, to keep it respectable. I don't want it near schools. I don't want it sold to children. That's an infamia. In my city, we would keep the traffic in the dark, people to call it. They're animals anyway, so let them lose their souls.
Our view moves from Don Corleone to the pudgy mustached Bruno Tattaglia, who shifts in his seat.
I hoped that we could come here and reason together. And as a reasonable man, I'm willing to do whatever's necessary to find a peaceful solution to this problem.
Then we are agreed. The traffic in drugs will be permitted, but controlled. And Don Corleone will give her protection in the East, and there will be the peace.
But I must have strict assurance from Corleone. As time goes by and his position becomes stronger, will he attempt any individual vendetta?
Look, we are all reasonable men here. We don't have to give assurances as if we were lawyers.
You talk about vengeance. Is vengeance going to bring your son back to you? Or my boy to me? I forgot the vengeance of my son. But I have selfish reasons. My younger son was forced to leave this country because of this Sarazzo business. All right, I have to make arrangements to bring him back here safely, clear of all these false charges. But I'm a superstitious man. And if some unlucky accident should befall him, if he should get shot in the head by a police officer, or if he should hang himself in his jail cell, or if he's struck by a bolt of lightning, then I'm going to blame some of the people in this room. And that I do not forgive. But that aside, let me say that I swear, on the souls of my grandchildren, that I will not be the one to break the peace we've made here today.
The squat Tattaglia, who wears a light tan suit, stands up proudly to face Don Corleone, who holds out his hands. Tattaglia nods, then steps around the table. Barzini also is helped out of his chair. From the far end of the room, we see Don Corleone and Tattaglia embrace each other. Nighttime. Tom and Don Corleone in the back seat of a car.
When I meet with the Tattaglia people, should I insist that all these drug middlemen have clean records?
Mention it. Don't insist. Barzini's the man who knows that without being told.
You mean Tattaglia?
Tattaglia's a pimp. He never could have outfought Santino. But I didn't know until this day that it was Barzini all along.
The scene dissolves to a schoolyard during the fall. Brown and yellow leaves blanket the sidewalk. Kay walks out of the playground.
Come on, Nancy. Keep together, everyone. Brian?
She leads a small group of children crossing the street. Her blonde hair curls up at the neck. In the middle of the road, she stops in her tracks to see the handsome Michael, dressed in a black coat and hat, standing next to a long black car. He stares at her with a set jaw.
How long have you been back?
Back a year. Longer than that, I think.
Her eyes widen in shock.
It's good to see you, Kate.
The faintest smile appears on his lips. Later, Kay and Michael walk alone. The black car trails 20 yards behind.
I'm working for my father now, Kay. He's been sick. Very sick.
But you're not like him, Michael. I thought you weren't going to become a man like your father. That's what you told me.
My father's no different than any other powerful man. Any man who's responsible for other people. Like a senator or a president.
You know how naive you sound.
Why?
Senators and presidents don't have men killed.
Oh. Who's being naive, Kay? Kay, my father's way of doing things is over. It's finished. Even he knows that. I mean, in 5 years, the Corleone family is going to be completely legitimate. Trust me, that's all I can tell you about my business. Okay.
Michael, why did you come here? Why? What do you want from me after all this time without even calling and writing?
I came here because I need you. Because I care for you.
Please stop it, Michael.
Because I want you to marry me.
It's too late. It's too
Please. Late.
Okay.
I'll do anything you ask, anything to make up for what's happened to us.
She shakes her head weakly.
Because that's important, Kay. Because what's important is that we have each other. That we have a life together. That we have children. Our children.
She covers her face.
Kay, I need you. And I love you.
Kay turns away, hugging her arms. Michael gestures toward the street as the black car rolls up to meet them. He opens the door for Kay and she gets in. The scene fades to black. Now we see a casually dressed Don Corleone poking his finger into a fish tank in his office.
Barzini's people chisel my territory and we do nothing about it. Pretty soon there won't be one place in Brooklyn I can hang my hat.
Just be patient.
I'm not asking you for help, Mike. Just take off the handcuffs.
Be patient. We gotta protect ourselves. Give me a chance to recruit some new men.
No. I don't want to give Barzini an excuse to start fighting.
Mike, you're wrong.
Don Corleone, you once said that the day would come when Tessio and me could form our own family. Till today, I would never think of it. I must ask your permission.
Well, Michael is now head of the family, and if he gives his permission, then do you have my blessing?
After we make the move to Nevada, you can break off from the Corleone family and go on your own. After we make the move to Nevada.
How long will that be?
6 months.
Forgive me, Godfather, but with you gone, me and Pete will come under Barzini's thumb sooner or later.
And I hate that goddamn Barzini. In 6 months' time, there won't be nothing left to build on.
You have faith in my judgment?
Yes.
Do I have your loyalty?
Yes, always, Godfather.
Then be a friend to Michael. Do as he says.
He shoos Tessio and Clemenza away. Michael walks to the desk.
There are things being negotiated now that are going to solve all your problems and answer all your questions. That's all I can tell you now. Carlo, you grew up in Nevada. When we make our move there, you're going to be my right-hand man. Tom Hagen's no longer consigliere. He's going to be our lawyer in Vegas. That's no reflection on Tom, but that's the way I want it. Besides, if I ever need help, who's a better consigliere than my father? Now that's it.
Michael wears a sharp gray suit. He sits down behind the desk. The chubby Clemenza stands up dejectedly and gets a handshake from Don Corleone. Tessio offers Michael his left hand. Michael looks at him, then shakes it. At the door, Don Corleone pinches Carlo's cheeks.
Thank you, Papa.
I'm happy for you, Carlo.
Mike, why am I out?
You're not a wartime consigliere, Tom. Things may get rough with the move we're trying.
Tom.
He waves him over. Tom sits down next to the Don on the couch.
I advise, Michael. I never thought you were a bad consigliere. I thought Santino was a bad Don. Rest in peace. Michael has all my confidence, as you do. But there are reasons why he must have no part in what is going to happen.
Maybe I could help.
You're out, Tom.
Don Corleone pats him on the back. Tom takes a deep breath, gets up, and leaves the room. Leaning his head back on the chair, Michael loosens his tie in relief. His father walks by, patting him on the chest, then on the cheek. The scene changes to a series of Las Vegas marquees in the daytime. The Desert Inn presents Patti Page. El Rancho Vegas presents Joe E. Lewis and Gloria DeHaven. At the Sands Hotel, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. Now we see a black car with white wall tires pull up to the entrance of a glamorous hotel. Fredo, who wears a yellow and black leisure suit, walks out and enters the lobby with his arm around Michael.
I can't get over the way your face looks. It really looks good.
This doctor did some job. We'll talk into it, okay?
Hey, wait. Hey, leave them out here. We'll deal with them later. He's tired. He wants to clean up. All right, now, let me open the door, all right?
Fredo dances into a room where a band plays, and Johnny Fontaine sits with a table full of blonde women.
Hello, Mike. Welcome to Las Vegas.
Well, his idea, right? Yeah.
Didn't you?
Freddy. Your brother, Freddie.
It was Jay.
Hey, girls here.
Huh? Well, I'll be right back.
All right.
Okay. You keep them occupied. Atta boy. Huh? Anything you want, kid. Anything. Huh?
Who are the girls?
That's for you to find out.
Get rid of them, Fredo.
Hey, Mike.
Fredo, I'm here on business. I leave tomorrow and I get rid of them. I'm tired. Get rid of the band, too.
Fredo, in sunglasses, steps over to the table, head bowed.
Hey, let's take off. Come on, take off. Let's go. Hey, that's it. Hey, Angelo. That's it. Quiet. Come on, let's go. Hey, come on! Scram!
The women leave with reproachful looks.
Come on, honey, let's go. Come on, I don't know, Johnny. I don't know what the hell's the matter with him. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Freddy.
Come on, Angelo. I don't know, he's just got a foot down. He's tired, he's...
Fredo ushers a costumed accordion player out of the room, then stands with his back to Michael.
What happened to Mo Green?
He said he had some business. He said give him a call when the party started.
We'll give him a call. Johnny, how are you?
Hello, Mike. Nice to see you again.
We're all proud of you.
Thanks, Mike.
Sit down, Johnny. I want to talk to you. The Don's proud of you, too, Johnny.
Well, I owe it all to him.
Well, he knows how grateful you are. That's why he'd like to ask a favor of you.
Mike, what can I do?
The Corleone family is thinking of giving up all its interest in the olive oil business, settling out here. Mm-hmm. Now, Mo Green will sell us his share of the casino and the hotel so it can be completely owned by the family. Tom?
Hey, Mike, are you sure about that? Mo loves the business. He never said nothing to me about selling.
Yeah, well, I'll make him an offer he can't refuse. See, Johnny, we figure that entertainment will be a big factor in drawing gamblers to the casino. And we hope you'll sign a contract to appear 5 times a year.
Johnny Fontaine looks at the papers.
Perhaps convince some of your friends in the movies to do the same. We're counting on you.
Johnny forms a crooked smile.
Sure, Mike. I'll do anything for my godfather, you know that.
Good.
They shake hands. A tall man with wide eyeglasses.
Hello, fellas. Everybody's here. Freddie, Tom, good to see you, Mike.
How are you, Mo?
All right. You got everything you want? The chef cooked for you special. The dancers will kick your tongue out and your credit is good. Draw chips for everybody in the room so they can play in the house.
The gawky Fredo helps Mo Green into a chair.
My credit good enough to buy you out?
Buy me out.
The casino. The hotel. Corleone family wants to buy you out.
The Corleone family wants to buy me out? No, I buy you out. You don't buy me out.
Your casino loses money. Maybe we can do better.
You think I'm skimming off the top, Mike?
Michael shakes his head.
You're unlucky.
You goddamn guineas really make me laugh. I do you a favor and take Freddie in when you're having a bad time, and then you try to push me out.
Wait a minute. You took Freddie in because the Corleone family bankrolled your casino because the Molinari family on the coast guaranteed his safety. Now, we're talking business. Let's talk business.
Yeah, let's talk business, Mike. First of all, you're all done. The Corleone family don't even have that kind of muscle anymore. The godfather is sick, right? You're getting chased out of New York by Barzini and the other families. What do you think is going on here? You think you can come to my hotel and take over? I talked to Barzini. I can make a deal with him and still keep my hotel.
Is that why you slapped my brother around in public?
Oh, no, that was nothing, Mike. Now, Mo didn't mean nothing by that. Sure, he flies off the handle once in a while, but Mo and me were good friends, right, Mo, huh?
I got a business to run. I got to kick asses sometimes to make it run right. We had a little argument, Freddie and I, so I had to straighten him out.
You straightened my brother out?
He was banging cocktail waitresses 2 at a time. Players couldn't get a drink at the table. What's wrong with you?
Staring at Mo, Michael calmly repockets a pack of cigarettes.
I leave for New York tomorrow. Think about a price.
Son of a bitch. Do you know who I am? I'm Mo Green. I made my bones when you were going out with cheerleaders.
Wait a minute, Mo. Mo, I got an idea. Tom? Tom, you're the consigliere, and you can talk to the Don, you can explain...
Just a minute. Don is semi-retired, and Mike is in charge of the family business now. If you have anything to say, say it to Mike.
Scowling, Mo Green storms out of the room with his bouncers.
Mike! You don't come to Las Vegas and talk to a man like Mo Green like that!
Michael puffs his cigarette.
Fredo, you're my older brother, and I love you. But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again. Ever.
Now, two Packard sedans pull into a driveway. In a back seat, the formally dressed Michael and Kay with their toddler son.
I have to see my father and his people, so have been without
me. Oh, Michael.
This weekend, we'll go out. Mm. We'll go to the city, we'll see a show, and we'll have dinner, I promise. Mm.
A doorman helps the little boy off Michael's lap.
Are you okay?
Oh, Michael. Michael, your sister wants to ask you something.
Well, let her ask.
No, she's afraid to. Connie and Carla want you to be godfather to their little boy.
No, we'll see.
Will you?
Let me think about it. We'll see. Come on.
He pats her hand, guiding her out of the car. The scene changes to Michael and his father sitting in a garden.
So, Barzini will move against you first. He'll set up a meeting with someone that you absolutely trust, guaranteeing your safety. And at that meeting, you'll be assassinated.
Michael looks at him squarely as the Don brings a wine glass to his lips.
I like to drink wine more than I used to.
He sips and shrugs.
Anyway, I'm drinking more.
It's good for you, Pop.
Don Corleone shifts his mouth in thought, considering his glass.
I don't know. Your wife and children, are you happy with them?
Very happy.
That's good. I hope you don't mind the way I keep going over this Bassini business.
No, not at all.
It's an old habit. I spend my life trying not to be careless. Women and children can be careless, but not men. How's your boy?
He's good.
You know, he looks more like you every day.
Michael nods at the ground and grins.
He's smarter than I am. 3 years old, he can read the funny papers.
The Don smiles widely.
Reads the funny papers.
He gazes skyward, then recovers.
I want you to arrange to have a telephone man check all the calls that go over. You're not able
I did it already, Pop.
Good
Pop,
anyone.
I took care of that.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Michael reaches out a hand.
What's the matter? What's bothering you?
The Don looks at his son with baggy, worried eyes.
I'll handle it. I told you I can handle it. I'll handle it.
His father looks down at his hands. Frowning, the Don stands and sits down on the other side of Michael.
I knew that Santana was going to have to go through all this. And Fredo... And I never wanted this for you. I worked my whole life. I don't apologize to take care of my family. And I refused to be a fool. Dancing on the string, held by all those big shots. I don't apologize, that's my life, but I thought that... But when it was your time, that you would be the one to hold the strings. Senator Corleone. Governor Corleone, something.
Another peasant of Anta.
This wasn't enough time, Michael. Wasn't enough time.
We'll get there, Pop. We'll get there.
He takes Michael's face and kisses him.
Now listen, whoever comes to you with this Barzini meeting, he's a traitor. Don't forget that.
He waves a finger at Michael, then stands up, hesitating, and moves away. Michael leans back on the chaise lounge, deep in thought. Now, Michael's son in the garden with his grandfather. Don Corleone shows his grandson, about three, how to squirt water from an insecticide pump gun. The child marches into the tomato plants. Don Corleone sits down heavily in a lounge chair and wipes his brow.
Yeah, that's fine. Over here. Be careful, you're spilling it. Come on.
The brown-haired, big-eyed Anthony carries the pump back to his grandpa. He puts the pump gun on the patio table. Anthony fiddles with a stick. Don Corleone cuts something on the table, then turns to stuff it in his mouth. He turns around, wearing the orange rind in his mouth like vampire teeth. Anthony puts up his hands. Don Corleone hoists the little boy up into his arms. He pats his bottom, calming him, then sets him down. The Don points to the 6-foot-high tomato plants. Don Corleone shuffles into a row of tomatoes. Little Anthony runs behind him, plays squirting him in the behind with the insecticide gun. The heavy-footed Don moves from row to row.
Where are you?
Don Corleone sticks his thumbs in his ears.
Yeah.
Chuckling, he removes the orange rind. Staggering, the Don trudges down a row. Suddenly, he careens backward, grabbing onto tomato stalks, unable to hold himself up. Over Anthony's shoulder, we see Don Corleone fall onto his back. The boy gleefully runs forward with the gun and sprays his grandfather, who lies unmoving on the ground. From a distance, we see the tall garden of tomato stalks. An overhead tarp flutters in the breeze. Anthony emerges from the garden and runs across the sunny lawn. The scene dissolves to a convoy of black hearses rolling through a cemetery gate. The first 6 cars have open flatbeds, carrying enormous arrangements of orange, gold, and white flowers. The seemingly endless line of black cars winds through the vast graveyard. From a distance, we see men carrying the flowers to a gravesite. Now a line of car doors swing open in unison. 4 black-suited drivers get out, then open their back doors. A variety of darkly dressed men and women emerge, each holding a single red rose. A final driver helps a frail, elderly man out of his car, the singer from Connie's wedding reception. The mourners gather beneath a giant headstone topped with angels and bearing the inscription, Corleone. Michael sits between Tom Hagen and his stout mother, who wears a black veil. Facing the casket and family, a small group of mourners makes the sign of the cross. Johnny Fontaine steps forward to lay his red rose on the closed casket. Michael watches with narrowed eyes as others do the same. After Clemenza makes his offering, he glances up, squinting. A quick view of a bodyguard standing behind Michael. Clemenza whispers something into the ear of a lanky, balding man who steps over to the waiting Barzini and gestures him forward. The graying Don approaches the casket with a bodyguard close behind him. Barzini tosses his rose onto the pile, then catches Michael's penetrating stare. Barzini tilts his head forward in the slightest of bows, then steps away. Michael watches skeptically as Barzini smiles and shakes hands with a few elderly men. The dour-faced Tessio emerges from behind Barzini, approaches Michael, and bends down to his ear.
Mike, can I have a minute?
Michael stands up, solemn-faced, and joins Tessio next to a giant flower arrangement. Tom Hagen turns in his seat to watch.
Berzini wants to arrange a meeting. He says we can straighten any of our problems out.
You talk to him?
Yeah. I can arrange security. On my territory. All right.
All right.
Tessio nods and roams away, adjusting his tie. Michael dazedly returns to the front row. Cinching up his pants, he sits back down. Tom leans closer.
You know how they're going to come at you?
They're arranging a meeting in Brooklyn. Tessio's ground. Where I'll be safe.
The two of them watch as Barzini continues his handshaking. The lanky, balding man lights his cigarette. Tessio appears at his side. Exhaling smoke, Barzini shakes his hand intently.
I always thought it would have been Clemenza, not Tessio.
It's the smart move. Tessio was always smarter. But I'm gonna wait. After the baptism.
He nods to Tom.
I've decided to be godfather to Connie's baby. And then I'll meet with Don Barzini. And Tattaglia. All the heads of the five families.
From the corner of his eyes, he watches Barzini drive away. Now inside a vast church. A small group stands in the front pews. A priest escorts Michael and Kay onto the altar, where a red-robed cardinal stands waiting. Kay holds a baby wrapped in a white satin gown and lace bonnet. The priest leads them to a baptism font.
Exia Deo, et munde spiritus et locum spiritui santo paraclito.
The priest breathes over the infant's head.
Amen.
A quick view of Michael's impassive, clean-shaven face. Now we see the infant asleep in Kay's arms. His godparents carefully pull off his lace bonnet. Elsewhere, in an attic apartment overlooking a boardwalk, a man assembles a machine gun in his lap. A quick view of Clemenza carrying a long cardboard box to his car. He stops to rub a spot on his hood with a small cloth. Back at the church, the priest blesses Michael with the sign of the cross. He obtains a pinch of dust from a small glass jar and sprinkles it over the sleeping baby's lips. Now a barber pats shaving cream on the face of a man with wavy black hair and a mustache. The man checks his watch. In another apartment, a young, clean-cut gunman pulls a dark jacket out of a suitcase. A close view of the priest's thumb as it traces a cross on the baby's forehead. Now we see a pistol being dumped from a brown paper bag onto a bedspread. Our view glides up to the young, clean-cut gunman, dressed in a police uniform. He wipes his perspiring neck with a handkerchief. Elsewhere, we see Clemenza jogging up a winding marble staircase, carrying the cardboard box. At the altar, the priest makes a cross in the air with his right hand, a close view of the sweetly slumbering baby. The priest anoints the infant's lips with his thumb. Michael watches with a heavy, contemplative expression. The priest dots holy water behind the baby's ears.
Michael, do you believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth?
I do.
Do you believe in Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord?
I do.
Do you believe in the Holy Ghost, the Holy Catholic Church?
I do.
A view of Barzini walking down a marble-walled corridor to a sidewalk where the gunman posing as a police officer gestures for a chauffeur to move his parked car. A montage of scenes. Clemenza, in the stairwell, climbs higher and higher with his box. Two men carry small machine guns out of the attic apartment. The wavy-haired man leaves the barbershop, a cigarette in his mouth. At the altar, the priest touches the baby's hand with his red stole. Barzini and another man emerge from a courthouse-like building with massive stone pillars. Barzini motions the man toward the sidewalk, where the fake policeman writes out a ticket for Barzini's chauffeur. Elsewhere, the wavy-haired man stops to smoke on a narrow carpeted stairway leading up to a hotel lobby. On a top floor, Clemenza reaches two gold-plated elevator doors and presses a button. Elsewhere, Mo Green stretches out on a massage table. A masseuse sprinkles oil on his bare back and kneads his muscles. At the altar, the priest anoints the infant.
Michael Francis Rizzi, do you renounce Satan?
Two men step out of the elevator. Clemenza pulls a shotgun from his box.
I can renounce him.
From behind, we see a man enter the massage room. Mo Green puts on his thick-framed glasses. One lens shatters, blood spurts from his eye.
And all his works?
The wavy-haired man trots into the hotel lobby. He jams a revolving door, trapping a white tuxedoed man inside, and draws a pistol.
I do renounce them.
The other two hitmen gun down a couple in bed.
And all his pumps?
On the sidewalk, the fake policeman shoots Barzini's chauffeur and assistant point blank. Barzini runs for the building, then takes a hit in the back and falls down the steps. The policeman hops into a getaway car.
Michael Rizzi, will you be baptized?
The priest drips holy water on the baby's head. A brief montage of the bloody, riddled corpses.
Michael Rizzi, go in peace and may the Lord be with you. Amen.
A distant view of a red brick cathedral. We see the baptismal party spilling out onto the steps, all wearing their Sunday best clothes. Connie holds her newborn son up to Michael. Michael kisses the baby. Below him, Kay collects Anthony and another boy about 8 years old. A man in a brown suit and fedora leaves a parked car and whispers in Michael's ear. Michael's eyes calmly shift from side to side. He says a few words to the man, who nods and moves away. Michael turns to Carlo on the step below him.
Carlo, can't go to Vegas. Something's come up. Everybody's going to have to leave without us.
Oh, Mike, it's our first vacation.
Hey, Connie, please.
What do you want to do?
Go back to the house. Wait for my call. It's important. I'll only be a couple of days.
He kisses Kay, tussles Anthony's hair, then kisses his mother. A distant view of the churchgoers climbing into their cars and the white-robed priest walking back up the steps. Now, Tom Hagen watches Tessio on the phone.
We're on our way to Brooklyn. I hope Mike can get us a good deal tonight.
Sure he will.
Tom steps away from him. Outside, he follows Tessio into the driveway. The wavy-haired man approaches.
Sal, Tom, the boss says we'll come in a separate car. He says for you two to go on ahead.
Hell, he can't do that. It screws up all my arrangements.
Well, that's what he said.
I can't go either, Sal.
Tom takes a small step back. Tessio looks around as three other men surround him. He turns and gives Tom a long, resigned stare.
Tell Mike it was only business. I always liked him.
He understands that.
Excuse me, Sal.
The wavy-haired man reaches into Tessio's jacket. The dark-faced Tessio turns again to Tom.
Tom, can you get me off the hook? For old time's sake.
Can't do it, Sally.
He gives a short, sideways nod to the other men and walks away. Tessio's lips falter in a half-smile. He turns around gloomily as the group of men escorts him to a car. Tom Hagen walks into the house, his brow furrowed. He stops at a diamond-patterned window and with a small apologetic frown, watches Tessio get into a car with the others. The scene changes to a front door opening slowly in shadow. Michael steps into the dimly lit room and stares. Several men file in behind him. Carlo, at a desk, looks up from a phone.
You have to answer for Santino, Carlo.
Carlo, hair slicked at the sides, gapes at him for a moment before getting up.
Mike, you got it all wrong. You fingered Sonny for the Barzini people. Ah, that little farce you played with my sister. You think that could fool the Corleone?
Mike, I'm innocent. I swear to kids. Please, Mike, don't do this.
Sit down.
Michael leisurely pulls a chair up next to Carlo and sits down. Leaning back, he looks down at his brother-in-law.
Barzini's dead. So is Philip Tattaglia. Mo Green. Stracci.
Carlo covers his face.
Cuneo. Today I settle all family business, so don't tell me you're innocent, Carlo. Admit what you did.
Sobbing, Carlo lowers his face into his hand.
Get him a drink. Come on. Don't be afraid, Carlo. Come on, you think I make my sister a widow? I'm godfather to your son, Carlo.
A glass is offered to the trembling man. Carlo takes it and puts it down.
Go ahead, drink.
Michael lifts Carlo's wrist like a baby, helping him take a wretched sip.
No, Carlo, you're out of the family business. That's your punishment. You're finished. I'm putting you on a plane to Vegas. Tom?
He reaches back for a plane ticket, which he hands to Carlo.
I want you to stay there. You understand?
Uh-huh.
Only don't tell me you're innocent. Because it insults my intelligence. It makes me very angry. Now, who approached you? Tattaglia or Barzini?
Carlo glances furtively at the waiting men. He turns back to Michael and looks him in the eye.
It was Barzini.
Michael's stone-still face doesn't flinch. He stands up and points toward the window.
There's a car waiting for you outside. Take it to the airport. I'll call your wife. Tell her what flight you're on.
Carlo approaches him beseechingly.
Please come on, get out of my sight.
Carlo turns, his head sagging, and drags his feet to the door. One of Michael's men helps him into a jacket. Outside, two men load suitcases into a trunk. Carlo, ticket in hand, gets into a blue-green sedan. Through the front windshield, we see him sink into the front seat with relief. Clemenza's massive silhouette looms behind him.
Hello, Carlo.
He wraps a wire garrote around Carlo's neck. He thrashes as Clemenza yanks him toward the back seat. His foot shatters the windshield into a thousand cracks and splinters. His foot jerks frantically from side to side and finally rests on the hood as the sedan pulls away. With a heavy gait, Michael walks methodically across the road and onto a flagstone path. His men follow close behind. The scene dissolves to a long red moving truck parked in the Corleone driveway. Several men in overalls carry furniture away from the house. A black sedan pulls up. Connie, struggling madly, breaks free from her mother in the back seat.
Oh, Mama, please!
She dashes into the house, shoving aside the moving men in her way. Kay runs with her into the office.
Michael, you lousy bastard. You killed my husband. You waited until Papa died so nobody could stop you, and then you killed him. You blamed him for Sonny. You always did. Everybody did. But you never thought about me. You never gave a damn about me. No, what am I going to do?
Connie.
A stern-faced Michael listens from behind the desk.
What?
Why do you think he kept Carlo at the mall? All the time he knew he was going to kill him. And you stood godfather to our baby. You lousy, cold-hearted bastard. I don't know how many men he had killed with Carlo. Read the papers, read the papers. That's your husband. That's your husband.
A guard tries to restrain her. Michael gestures for him to let her go. Her face twisted with anguish, Connie falls into Michael's arms.
No! No!
She pushes him away. Michael lets out a deep breath. He glances up to see Kay's eyes fixed on him. Wearing suspenders, tie, and a blue dress shirt, Michael walks evenly across the room, passing the wide Venetian blinds. He comes around to face Kay.
She's hysterical.
Kay's eyes are narrowed and filled with tears. Michael pops in a cigarette.
Hysterical.
Michael, is it true?
Don't ask me about my business, Kate.
Is it true?
Don't ask me about my business.
No!
He slams the desk. Kay, back straight, lowers her eyes. Turning aside, Michael rests an arm on the back of a chair, only to shove it violently away. He turns at the window. Glancing at his wife, he steps forward.
All right. This one time.
He holds up one finger and wags it.
This one time I'll let you ask me about my affairs.
The tearful Kay looks him directly in the eye, then raises her brow.
Is it true?
Michael stares back at her unblinkingly. He shakes his head.
No.
Kay breaks into a smile. Wrapping his arms around her, he envelops Kay in a warm embrace. They rock slowly back and forth.
I guess we both need a drink.
She moves out of her husband's arms and steps into the adjoining room. We see her profile in the foreground as she opens a bottle. Beyond her, through the open doorway, Michael leans against his desk, staring at her with deeply shadowed eyes. Three men appear at his side. Kay looks up. Michael shakes the hand of Clemenza, who hugs him tightly, bows his head, and lowers his lips to Michael's right hand.
That Corleone.
Michael offers his hand to the second man, who also kisses it. Michael pats the side of his face. The third man closes the door on Kay's suspicious, piercing stare. This film has been described for visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, a service of the WGBH Educational Foundation. Descriptions read by Margot Stage. On a black screen, credits roll. Directed by Francis Ford Coppola. Screenplay by Mario Puzo and Francis Ford Coppola. Produced by Albert S. Ruddy. Starring Marlon Brando and Al Pacino as Michael. James Caan as Sonny. Richard Castellano as Clemenza. Robert Duvall as Tom Hagen, Sterling Hayden as Captain McCluskey, John Marley as Jack Waltz, Richard Conti as Barzini, Al Lettieri as Salazzo, Diane Keaton as Kay Adams, an Albert S. Ruddy production, co-starring Abe Vigoda as Tessio, Talia Shire as Connie, Gianni Russo as Carlo, John Cazale as Fredo, Rudy Bond as Cuneo, Al Martino as Johnny Fontaine, Morgana King as Mama Corleone, Lenny Montana as Luca Brazzi, John Martino as Pauli Gatto, Salvatore Corsito as Bonacera, Richard Bright as Neri. Director of Photography, Gordon Willis. Production Designer, Dean Tavularis. Costume Designer, Anna Hill Johnstone. Edited by William Reynolds, ACE, and Peter Zinner, ACE. Associate Producer, Gray Fredrickson. Music composed by Nino Rota. Conducted by Carlos Savina. Additional music, Mall Wedding Sequence by Carmine Coppola, I Have But One Heart by Johnny Farrow and Marty Symes, Luna Mezzomare by Paolo Citarella, Manhattan Serenade by Louis Alter, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine, Santa Claus is Coming to Town by Haven Gillespie and J. Fred Coots. The Bells of St. Mary's by A.E. Adams and Douglas Ferber. All of My Life by Irving Berlin. Mona Lisa by J. Livingston and Ray Evans. Baptism Sequence by J.S. Bach. Art Director, Warren Clymer. Set Director, Philip Smith. Casting, Fred Ruse, Andrea Eastman, and Louis DiGiamo. Post-Production Consultant, Walter Murch. Makeup, Dick Smith and Philip Rhodes. Hairstylist, Phil Leto. Wardrobe Supervisor, George Newman. Women's Wardrobe, Marilyn Putnam. Camera Operator, Michael Chapman. Script Continuity, Nancy Tonery. Production Recording, Christopher Newman. Re-recording, Bud Grenzbach and Richard Portman. Assistant to Producer, Gary Chazen. Executive Assistant, Robert S. Mendelson. Location Coordinators, Michael Briggs and Tony Bowers. Foreign Post-Production, Peter Zinner. For Oak Tree Productions, Unit Production Manager, Fred Caruso. Assistant Director, Fred Gallo. Unit Coordinator, Robert Barth. Special Effects, A.D. Flowers, Joe Lombardi, and Sass Bedig. Location Service, Cinemobile Systems, Incorporated. Produced by Alfren Productions, Incorporated. Copyright 1972 by Paramount Pictures Corporation. All rights reserved. Sicilian Unit, Production Manager, Valerio De Paolis. Assistant Director, Tony Brandt. Assistant Art Director, Samuel Wirtz. Color by Technicolor. Alex Rocco as Mo Green, Tony Giorgio as Bruno Tattaglia, Vito Scotti as Nazarene, Terry Livrano as Teresa Hagen, Victor Rendina as Philip Tattaglia, Jeannie Linero as Lucy Mancini, Julie Gregg as Sandra Corleone, Ardell Sheridan as Mrs. Clemenza. Sicilian Sequence, Simonetta Stefanelli as Apollonia, Angelo Infanti as Fabrizio, Corrado Gaipa as Don Tomasino, Franco Chitti as Callo, Saro Uruzzi as Vitelli. Over the logo of a star-crested mountain, a title appears, Paramount, a Gulf and Western Company.